The house will come to order. We're at that order of business request to concur with Senate amendments to House bills. The first message for our consideration is message number 320 on House Bill 8. Chairman Simlek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move for concurrence of House Bill 8 and ask that you vote no. Members of the House, we have worked on the issues of food freedom for, seemed like forever, 3 or 4 years. And the legislature has resisted the marketing of raw milk. We've resisted without inspection. We resisted the sale of meat and vegetable products, maybe, without inspection. But this is not about that. This is about Wyoming Traditional Food Act. And what this bill provided was that the traditional events that we have in Wyoming is defined in the bill as being weddings, funerals, potluck dinners, charitable cook-offs, and those types of activities have gone without inspection from the Department of Ag for years until a couple years ago, and then those types of activities begin to occur in these traditional events, and legislature pushed back and said, no, these are events that we hold that people are not paying for and that people are able to come and go as they choose, and we don't believe that this should be under inspection. The concurrence request is ask us now, since we have eliminated the ability of the Department of Ag to do these inspections, they have inserted the language that any city or town may provide for licensure, permitting, certification, inspection, packaging, labeling pertaining to the preparation, serving, use, consumption, storage of foods at a traditional vendor activity upon the adoption of an ordinance for that purpose. Members of the House, this came out of the blue for me. We had never talked about this in the context of this bill, and I'm not sure why that occurred, so I'm asking to vote no, and we'll go and find out why they put that in there, because I'm really kind of baffled by that. So I'd ask that you vote no.
We're voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 8. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
No.
Berger.
No.
Blake. Flickrey,
no.
Bonner,
no.
Botten,
no.
Brechtel,
no.
Brown,
no.
Burkhart,
no.
Byrd,
no.
Campbell,
no.
Kennedy,
no.
Childers,
no.
Connolly,
no.
Kraft,
no.
Davison excused, Edmonds,
no.
Eklund,
no.
Esquivel,
no.
Freeman,
no.
Gay,
no.
Gingery,
no.
Goggles,
no.
Greer,
no.
Green,
no.
Harshman,
no.
Harvey, Hunt,
no.
Illaway,
no.
Yagi,
no.
Kasparik excused, Croker,
no.
Crone,
no.
Lockhart excused, Laux,
no.
Lubno,
no.
Madden,
no.
McKim,
no.
McComey,
no.
Miller,
no.
Miller, Moniz,
no.
Nicholas,
no.
Patton,
no.
Peasley,
no.
Pedersen excused, Peterson,
no.
Petroff,
no.
Korberg,
no.
Roscoe,
no.
Simlek, Shepperson, Stewart, Stubson, Teeters, Throne, Bronish, Wallace, Swanitzer Dan, Swanitzer Dave, Mr. Speaker, Miller, Miller, I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. Gingrey? The vote is closed. 55 noes, 4 excused, 1 absent.
By your vote, you have voted to not concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 8. The next Message for our consideration is message 321 to House Bill 20, Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And if I may first have privilege of the floor, coffee cup left on the podium. If it's yours, please come claim it. I don't want to knock it off. Okay, talking, I move concurrence to message number 321, referring to House Bill 20, and ask that you vote no. Actually, I had anticipated asking you to vote aye on this because the Senate said that they that was an important part. And if you remember this bill, it is how we allow limited liability companies, we allow parents to form limited liability companies and hire who they wish to serve their family members. But the good majority floor leader pointed out to me that on page 2, line 9, that part of the amendment, there are no limited liability corporations. There are limited liability companies, and therefore I think we need to go back and review that. The second reason that I think that you should vote no on this is that although the Senate felt there was comfort in this as far as fraud was concerned, I would submit to you that there are plenty of cases where spouses take care of their spouse who has an acquired brain injury rather than put them in a nursing home. And are we going to make them go out and create an LLC to do those services? And I would submit to you that there are a lot of opportunities for people to serve their family members in a way that is appropriate. There is certification and many safeguards in place in the bill. So I would urge you to vote no on concurrence, and let's go talk to them about the difference between a company and a corporation.
We're voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 20. A majority of the elected members is required. Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Barbudo.
No.
Berger.
No.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
No.
Flickrey.
No.
Bonner.
No.
Botten.
No.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
No.
Burkhart.
No.
Byrd.
No.
Campbell.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Childers.
No.
Connolly.
No.
Kraft.
No.
Davison excused. Edmonds.
No.
Eklund, Esquivel, Freeman, Gay, Gingery, Goggles, Greer, Green, Harshman, Harvey, Hunt, Illaway, Yagi, Kasparic excused, Croker, Crone, Lockhart excused, Laux, Lubno, Madden, McKim, McComey, Miller, Moniz, Nicholas,
no.
Patton,
no.
Peasley,
no.
Pedersen excused, Peterson,
no.
Petroff,
no.
Korberg,
no.
Roscoe,
no.
Simlick,
no.
Shepperson,
no.
Stewart,
no.
Stubson,
no.
Teeters,
no.
Throne,
no.
Vronish,
no.
Wallace,
no.
Swanitzer Dan,
no.
Swanitzer Dave,
no.
Mr. Speaker,
no.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 56 no, 4 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to not concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 20. The next message for our consideration is message 322 to House Bill 50. Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move message 322, referring to House Bill 50, and urge your no vote on this bill as well. The House decided that it would be a good thing to move this into the hands of the legislature. The Senate tried to make it conform with the funding, the grant funding, and in doing so, they pretty much stripped out everything that we had asked for. Another thing that reason to vote no on this bill is the things that we put in here, including the appropriation, were to study other things besides besides the things that were in the grant, specifically page 5, lines 15 through 24, page 6, lines 6 through 10, and 16 through 24. I mean, there are just so many things that we wanted to take a look at, and they stripped it out, and I would urge a no vote on this concurrence.
We are voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 50. A majority of the elected members is required. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
No.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
No.
Flickery.
No.
Bonner.
No.
Botten.
No.
Brechtel. Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
No.
Burkhart.
No.
Byrd.
No.
Campbell.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Childers.
No.
Connolly.
No.
Kraft.
No.
Davison excused. Edmonds.
No.
Eklund.
No.
Esquivel. Freeman,
no.
Gay,
no.
Gingery,
no.
Goggles,
no.
Greer,
no.
Green,
no.
Harshman,
no.
Harvey,
no.
Hunt,
no.
Illaway,
no.
Yagi,
no.
Kasparic excused, Croker,
no.
Crone,
no.
Lockhart excused, Laux,
no.
Lubno,
no.
Madden,
no.
McKim,
no.
McComey,
no.
Miller,
no.
Moniz,
no.
Nicholas, Patton,
no.
Peasley,
no.
Pedersen excused, Peterson,
no.
Petroff,
no.
Korberg,
no.
Roscoe,
no.
Simlek,
no.
Shepperson,
no.
Stewart,
no.
Stubson,
no.
Teeters,
no.
Throne,
no.
Ronish,
no.
Wallace,
no.
Zwanitzer Dan,
no.
Zwanitzer Dave,
no.
Mr. Speaker,
no.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 56 no, 4 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to not concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 50. The next message for our consideration is message 324 to House Bill 81. Chairman Elway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence on message 324 to House Bill 81, vacant land, and surprise, surprise, I'm going to ask you to vote yes. The Senate made a few minor changes to the bill, actually made it probably just a little bit better. They added a phrase on the vacant land. They didn't touch our amendments, so it's a good bill, and I'd ask you to vote yes.
We are voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 81. A majority of the elected members is required. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Flickery.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Yeah.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison excused. Edmonds. Eklund,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer,
aye.
Green,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
aye.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparic excused, Croker,
aye.
Crone,
aye.
Lockhart excused, Laux,
aye.
Lubno,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
McComey,
aye.
Miller, Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
aye.
Pedersen excused, Peterson,
aye.
Petroff,
aye.
Korberg,
no.
Roscoe,
aye.
Simlek,
aye.
Shepperson,
aye.
Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Bronish,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dan,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Brechtel? Aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 54 aye, 2 no, 4 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 81. The next message for our consideration is message 325 to House Bill 88. Chairman Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I move message 325 on House Bill 88 and ask you to vote no. There were two amendments to this that I think we ought to go discuss with them. One, we had fashion this bill such that there was a possibility of, wait a minute, I'm backwards. We had fashioned this bill to say that a member of the Outfitters Board could not serve more than two consecutive terms. They struck that out. I think we need to talk to them about that. And then they took, while they were at it, they pulled another section of the Outfitters statutes into this and tried to say that an outfitter or a resident who wanted to guide somebody but was not a professional guide could get a guide's license not more than two times a year. That's already existing law. And the statute used to say that they couldn't accept directly or indirectly any compensation for their services. They're trying to change that to say they couldn't accept direct financial compensation, and they're taking the word indirectly out. And the House sponsor of the bill is very uncomfortable with that, as am I, and I think we ought to go talk to him about it. And I'm probably lobbying Mr. Speaker to have the House sponsor on the conference committee and would ask you to vote no.
We're voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 88. A majority of the elected members is required. Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Barbudo.
No.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
No.
Blickrey.
No.
Bonner.
No.
Botten.
No.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
No.
Burkhart.
No.
Byrd.
No.
Campbell.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Childers.
No.
Connolly.
No.
Kraft.
No.
Davison excused. Edmonds.
No.
Eklund.
No.
Esquivel.
No.
Freeman.
No.
Gay. Gingery,
no.
Goggles,
no.
Greer,
no.
Green,
no.
Harshman,
no.
Harvey,
no.
Hunt,
no.
Illaway,
no.
Yagi,
no.
Kasparic excused, Croker,
no.
Crone,
no.
Lockhart excused, Laux,
no.
Lubno,
no.
Madden,
no.
McKim,
no.
McComey,
no.
Miller,
no.
Moniz,
no.
Nicholas,
no.
Patton,
no.
Peasley, Pedersen excused, Peterson,
no.
Petroff,
no.
Korberg,
no.
Roscoe,
no.
Simlick,
no.
Shepperson,
no.
Stewart,
no.
Stubson,
no.
Teeters,
no.
Throne,
no.
Braunisch,
no.
Wallace,
no.
Swanitzer Dan,
no.
Swanitzer Dave,
no.
Mr. Speaker,
no.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 56 no, 4 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to not concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 88. The next message for our consideration is message 329 to House Bill 246. Madam Chair Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move for concurrence on message number 329 on House Bill 246, and I ask for your aye vote. This was a very simple change that I brought to my good colleagues down to the floor when our bill crossed over and became engrossed. There was a slight mistake made. We had Romanet 3 in our engrossed copy, and it should have been Romanet 8. So I would ask for your aye vote.
We are voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 246. Majority of the elected members is required. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blickrey.
Bonner,
aye. Botten,
aye.
Brechtel,
aye.
Brown,
aye.
Burkhart,
aye.
Byrd,
aye.
Campbell,
aye.
Kennedy,
aye.
Childers,
aye.
Connolly,
aye.
Kraft,
aye.
Davison excused, Edmonds,
aye.
Eklund,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer,
aye.
Green,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey, Hunt,
aye.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparic excused, Croker,
aye.
Crone,
aye.
Lockhart excused, Laux,
aye.
Lubno,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
McComey,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
aye.
Pedersen excused, Peterson,
aye.
Petroff,
aye.
Korberg,
aye.
Roscoe,
aye.
Simlick,
aye.
Shepperson,
aye.
Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Braunisch,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan,
aye.
Swanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 56 aye, 4 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 246. We're at that order of business, adoption of conference committee reports. Chairman Brown, could you come up here for a second? The first report for our consideration is Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1, Senate File 128, Representative Peasley.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I got appointed as chairman of my first committee in 3 years, and we went to work. We took some adults down to the other end and met with the children, and we worked out a tough one. And I would ask, therefore, that Mr. Chairman, I would move the adoption of Joint Conference Committee Report to House Bill Number 128 and ask for a aye vote, and I'll explain it just briefly. Sometimes you have to go to the woodshed, sometimes you have to tell them how the cow ate the cabbage, and other times you got to go down and lick some boots and compromise, and we did the latter. This was a bill had to do with the storage of vehicles. All of you remember the intense debate on this, and, well, probably you don't. In any event, we had originally, the law used to say $5 a day for storage for abandoned vehicles, and the Senate had sent it down here and had increased it to a punitive $20 a day, and we tried to beat that back a little bit and get a compromise at $5 a day for the first 30 days and then up to 10. And we couldn't get them to go with that, so we cut the baby like all good politicians do, and we agreed to accept $10 a day straight through, which is right in the middle of everybody, and I hope you all take that and reward us for our hard work. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Speaker.
We're voting on the Joint Conference Committee Number 1 to Senate File 128. A majority of the elected members is required to adopt the report. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo. Berger,
aye.
Blake,
aye.
Flickery,
aye.
Bonner,
aye.
Botten,
aye.
Brechtel,
aye.
Brown,
aye.
Burkhart,
aye.
Bird,
aye.
Campbell,
aye.
Kennedy,
aye.
Childers,
aye.
Connolly,
aye.
Kraft,
aye.
Davison excused, Edmonds,
aye.
Eklund,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer,
aye.
Green,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
aye.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparik excused, Croker,
aye.
Crone,
aye.
Lockhart excused, Laux,
aye.
Lubno,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
McComey,
aye.
Miller,
no.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
no.
Nicholas,
no.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley, Peterson excused, Peterson,
aye.
Petroff,
aye.
Korberg,
no.
Roscoe,
no.
Simlick,
no.
Shepperson,
aye.
Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Braunisch,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan,
aye.
Swanitzer Dave,
no.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 50 aye, 6 no, 4 excused.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 to Senate File 128. Appointments to conference committees. House Bill 8. The conferees will be Representative Simlek, Chair, Representatives Moniz and Wallace. House Bill 20, Representative Harvey, Chairman, Representatives Gingrey, Shepperson. House Bill 50, Representative Gingrey, Chairman, Representatives Harvey and Edmonds. House Bill 88. Representative McComey, Chairman. Representatives Childers and Stubson. We're at that order of business. Consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Brothers and sisters of the 61st, if you would move Senate File 90, which is the third bill on your list, down below Senate File 29. It's being moved because Representative Kasparek is the floor manager of that bill, and she's not feeling well today. With that, Mr. Speaker, I move that the House resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The House is resolved into committee of the whole. Representative Croker.
Thank you. I wanted to share that on this day in history, a whole lot of people did a whole lot of things. Some of them were good, some of them were bad. Some people were born and some others died, and in 100 years from now, they'll be able to say all the same things about today. So let's get to work. The Committee of the Whole, please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 47. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 47, introduced by Senator Jennings, an act relating to concealed weapons. This bill was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Botten, Davison, Yagi, McKim, McComey, Petroff, Shepperson, no, Connolly.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman McComey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, to do so with the recommendation that Senate File 47 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And Mr. Chairman, I'll turn the explanation of the bill over to the good gentleman from House District 18, and the Standing Committee Amendment will be explained by the good gentleman from House District 30 at the appropriate time.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you. Members of the 61st, I bring you finally Senate File 47. Been waiting this for a few days. Start off, the reason for bringing this bill, just want to read the Second Amendment of the Constitution. A well-rated, regulated militia is necessary to the security of a free state, and the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. In our Wyoming Constitution, the right of the citizens to bear arms in defense of themselves and of the state shall not be denied. And in our Wyoming statutes, 68401, the Wyoming legislature finds that the right to bear and keep arms is a fundamental right. The Wyoming legislature affirms this right as a constitutionally protected right in every part of Wyoming. There's probably the main reason I bring this bill. Just stated it. We'll point out a couple things about this. We talk about in our statutes right now who can possess. And in 68103, you need to be a member of the United States and a resident of Wyoming for not less than 6 months. You need to be 21 years of old. You can't suffer from a physical infirmity, which prevents the safe handling of a firearm. And we have adopted in our code the U.S. Code 922, and I'll skip the rest of the Wyoming Code and just go to the U.S. Code, which some states, this is all they have. We have a little more than that, but real briefly, let me tell you who cannot possess, according to our statutes and the U.S. Code that's part of ours. You have to be, or you can't be convicted in a court of a crime punishable for more than 1 year. You can't be a fugitive from justice. And I would like to ask you kind of the point of this one. Do the fugitives really care about a law to carry or not carry? The third one is if you're an unlawful user or addicted to a controlled substance, If you've been adjudicated to mental defective, or who has been committed to the mental institution, an alien that's illegal or unlawful in the United States, if you've had a dishonorable discharge from armed forces, if you've renounced your citizenship, and the last one that I'll read is who have been convicted in a court of a misdemeanor crime of domestic violence. That's a pretty big thing. Would like to tell you, in our statutes, we do have some pretty severe penalties. And the first one I refer to is 68101. This is talking about if you use a firearm in committing a felony, you can be imprisoned for not more than 10 years in addition to the punishment of the felony. A second one is up to 20 years plus the punishment of the felony. 68102 talks about repeat violent offenders in possession getting another 3 years or $5,000. And 65205 talks about if you're interfering with a police officer. I would like to point out that there are three states that have passed you can carry without a permit. And by the way, I just mentioned, just found out just now that Montana just passed theirs in one house, one body of their legislature is going to the other. Arizona just passed this in last year. Alaska has had it, I believe, since 03. And Vermont has never had any permit required to carry. And the latest data, I just found some things on them, the latest that I found is they only had 60 in the last year that I found this, 60 weapons violations. So with open carry, they're not having a lot of some of the emails that we're hearing and the concerns. What Senate File 47 does is on page 2, line 19, has a new paragraph that talks about you're able to carry concealed without a permit. The regulations on page 2, 19 through 20 refer to the U.S. code that is a pretty good code in who can possess. And we amended section T on page 3, line 1 to include the same restrictions of where one can carry concealed carry without a permit. So that is in this legislation. Now, when we were making this, we looked at the Vermont because they have the history of they've never had a permit, and we wanted to keep, but they have no permit. We wanted to keep our concealed carry permit available, so if you go out of state, you can still get a permit and have the reciprocity with going into neighboring states. So we didn't mess with that. We left that alone. That's on page 2, line 10 through 17. And again, I just say Vermont does not require a permit to carry concealed or otherwise, and it doesn't issue any permits at all. If one may possess, one can carry. And they also have the same qualifier of the section, the federal section code, Title 18922. And that's all they have. We have a little bit more than that. Now, isn't it interesting if we've all had quite a few emails that we don't see Vermont dominating the headlines with a lot of the concerns? And I think Senate File 47 will restore the rights of the people to be able to carry if they meet those requirements that I've gone over. Would like to say some states let you get a gun at age 16. We are at age 21. And I would point out that our military, the National Guard, at age 18, they get a gun, or they go in the military, they're trained, we're deploying them, they come back, and they have to wait till they're 21 before they can still possess a gun. So I think we have some pretty good regulations. So, members of the 21st or 61st, 21st, 21, whatever, 61st, I'd really like you to pass this. We can restore the protections guaranteed by the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, the Wyoming Constitution, and our state statutes. I'd like now for the bringer of this amendment, if he would come up and present the amendment that's been moved.
Representative Button.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Standing Committee Amendment 1, I'm going to tell you what it is, and then I'm going to tell you where it arises from. What it is simply this. If you're too intoxicated by drugs or alcohol to drive a vehicle lawfully, well, you're probably too intoxicated to have a weapon with you. And that's simply that. Now, how does that arise? We had in committee, about 2 days of testimony on this bill. And it sort of came down to an argument like this. Law enforcement, under the current statute, they have a tool to use regarding what you might call the bad guys. The guys who don't have permits, the guys who shouldn't have a concealed weapon. Upon running into such a, what you call a bad guy, you simply ask them for their permit. If they don't have one, well, by golly, they're doing something wrong. By passing this bill, and I'm supporting this bill, that tool against the so-called bad guys disappears. So law enforcement was seeking some sort of tool to use against those bad guys. Now, let's sort of describe the argument that we heard in committee. According to some authoritative law enforcement testimony, law enforcement is not concerned about what you'd call the good guys, the law-abiding citizens who have guns, know what they're for, know how to use them safely, know how not to use them. These people abide by the law. They're not drunk drivers. They're not persons who want to carry a firearm while they're drunk. So law enforcement's not concerned about those guys. They're concerned about, again, what are called the bad guys, the guys who don't care whether they have a permit. They're going to carry a gun anyway. The guys who don't respect the law, the guys who don't really think about gun safety like responsible people do. These are the people that they're concerned about, and rightly so. So in consultation with some law enforcement, we discussed, well, what can we do to give you a tool with respect to the bad guys, the guys who don't abide by the law? And so this was one tool that was suggested. Now, I'm going to go into this a little bit because I heard some things mentioned after this came out, one of which was, well, you know, if you really think that people are going to stop drinking and carrying guns, you're crazy. Well, I respond to that in this fashion. Again, the law-abiding people, the people like you who have weapons, respect them, understand the safety concerns. They're not the ones going out and driving drunk. They're not the ones who want to carry weapons when they're drunk. They're the people who are concerned, hopefully as you are, about the bad guys who do the bad things that make the law-abiding citizens look bad because it involves a weapon. This is a tool, again, not for use against the good guys, but against the bad guys, the guys who are the lawbreakers. One question was asked of law enforcement, well, if this is adopted, how would it be used in practice? I mean, after all, would we start having people with breathalyzers sticking it in our mouths and determining if we're drunk and then patting us down for a weapon, or the reverse, patting us down and then sticking a tube in our mouth to see if we're intoxicated? And the answer was no. There's pretty well-settled criminal procedures that law enforcement follows, and it simply is you have to have the proper reason to conduct a stop. Somebody is perhaps committing a criminal enterprise or such, and that leads the police officer to maybe have contact with that individual, And obviously the police officer might not know that there is a weapon because it's concealed. They don't know. But upon further investigation, might conclude that the person is intoxicated. And that might lead to a further investigation, an evolution of the investigation to find that the person has a concealed weapon. And at that point, a test to determine whether the intoxication level exists might be given. This amendment is, I submit to you, a strengthening of the bill. I think it's considered to be a friendly amendment and one that I urge you to adopt. Thank you.
Representative Shepperson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize. I was not in committee the day this was discussed, so I guess I have some big reservations with this standing committee amendment. And this amendment doesn't just target the bad guys. It targets everybody. And specifically this last sentence that says any person who carries a concealed firearm, da-da-da-da, gives a consent to chemical tests, blah, blah, blah. That's an infringement on our rights. And just because we are taking advantage of our Second Amendment, just because we are carrying a concealed weapon, we have to give up some of these other most basic rights? I guess that doesn't make sense to me. And this amendment, it's one of those things that, it makes us feel good because we're trying to limit the scope and we're going to eliminate the drunks. But it's hurting everyone, and it doesn't strengthen the bill, in my opinion. And I would urge caution and ask you to vote no on the standing committee amendment.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the bill and against the amendment, the standing committee amendment number one, for this reason, and you have to back up to sort of understand how concealed weapon works in this state. We have open carry. We have concealed carry. When you pull out the statutes, we don't have statutes dealing with open carry. When you get into open carry, really the main restriction, there's one or two statutes there at the very beginning dealing with felonies, but all these requirements and all these things about your age and your infirmity and all these other things, they're only talking about concealed weapon. They're not talking about open carry. The only thing that really restricts open carry are those few state statutes, but most importantly, 922G. 922G is a big bill or a big statute that everyone who deals with in prosecution knows that's a federal law, and that comes up a lot, 922G violations. And the federal government has a very long list of who cannot hold cannot possess a firearm, regardless if it's open or concealed. So the feds cover this really, really well already. There's not a great need for the state to get into who can and can't hold a firearm because it's already covered pretty heavily by the federal government. What this is dealing with is not with open carry. So understand, if you pass this amendment, all it's doing is saying if you have a concealed weapon, this applies. But if you are open carry, meaning it's just on your hip and you don't have a coat over it, this would not apply to it. That's the problem I have with all these restrictions. That there, I actually would go to the more extreme position of there should be no restrictions on concealed carry. Because if we're not going to have any restrictions on open carry, then there should not be any restrictions on concealed carry. The Second Amendment doesn't say you have the right to bear arms with the following caveats, and then five pages of reasons why when you can't. There should be no restrictions. That is your right to carry a firearm. And I would also point out that if you actually go to the one dealing with the restrictions on concealed carry right now, it already has one that if you are using alcohol or malt beverages to the extent that your normal faculties are impaired. I actually find that to be better language, what's already in statute. And that's actually part of this bill, that you have to comply with subsection 6, that your faculties cannot be impaired. What concerns me about this amendment is that it's not using faculties are impaired. Instead, they're using the same thing that you use for vehicle, operating a motor vehicle, that you're under the influence. Under the influence at .08 is extremely different than the other language of having
no control of your normal faculties. That's when you're getting to more like a 0.15, you know, a 2.0, something like that, where you're fall down drunk. That's what they're talking about there. I have difficulty that we're using the motor vehicle to define it. I think it's already defined in the statute. And then more importantly, I don't think there should be any restriction. If you're not going to restrict open carry, we should not be restricting concealed carry. You should have the right to wear it on the outside of your coat, inside your coat, regardless of what the law, what it says.
Representative Botten. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to respond to these. You know, I submit that the DUI, or rather the amendment, is not directed at everyone. It is directed at those folks who believe that apparently getting intoxicated and carrying a weapon is a good thing. I haven't met anybody who really is advocating for drunk people carrying guns. I don't understand that criticism too much. I haven't looked at the federal law. I'm not sure that there is a what you might call a drunk packing sort of federal law that this amendment deals with. As to this only applying to concealed weapons and not to open carry, you know, we looked at that. This is a concealed carry bill, and if we had added something for open carry, I think we would have been objected to as going beyond the scope of the bill and getting into the open carry area. So while that might have been a good idea, it just was precluded. We couldn't do that, at least as I understood the rules to apply. The statute on the books prohibits chronically or habitually use of alcoholic liquor and malt beverages to the extent normal faculties are impaired. So let's say a law enforcement officer approaches somebody who, upon further investigation, just happens to have a concealed weapon. Now, how is that law enforcement officer to know whether this is a person who he's never seen before is a chronically or habitually alcohol user to the extent his normal faculties are impaired? It's an impossible standard. And that's why we thought we'd add this. The basic idea here is if, you know, we should have a public policy that says intoxication and firearms don't mix. I really never thought of that as a Second Amendment issue, but you know, the Second Amendment, is, as I think you're aware, is not totally without restrictions, at least says our latest decision out of the United States High Court, which specifically said that prohibitions on possession of firearms by felons and mentally ill and laws carrying firearms in sensitive places such as schools and government buildings, those are reasonable restrictions, even under that most recent 2010 case that we know is McDonald. If you're too drunk to hurdle your 3-ton car down the interstate at 75 miles an hour, I submit to you that you're too drunk to be safely carrying a firearm. And again, it's not the law-abiding citizens we're worried about. It's the ones who are reckless, and we're concerned, and law enforcement is concerned about having this tool. So I ask for your support. Representative Jefferson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I know everybody's probably made up their mind, but I just couldn't resist saying this. The difference between too drunk to drive your car down the road is that's a privilege. Having a driver's license is a privilege. This is a right, a constitutional right. That's the main difference for me. So thank you.
You have heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The Standing Committee Amendment has failed. We're back on the bill. Representative Yagi.
Representative Zwanitzer, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 47 and ask for your approval. It's a short little thing, but I would like to go through. What I am doing is repealing some of the restrictions as to where you can carry these firearms. And I know all of you do not have those restrictions in front of you, so I want to go through them to make sure that there's no misunderstanding. The couple that we're going to leave in is the fact that you cannot carry a concealed weapon into law enforcement operations, and also you can't carry it into a prison or a jail. But what we do want to take away is the fact that we want you to be able to carry one into a courtroom, because right now the judge is able to have a firearm in the courtroom, and so there's no reason the prosecutor should not be able to have one, and the defendant, because the defendant's innocent until proven guilty. And so if they all have firearms, I don't think we'll have any confrontations. Number 4 and number 5 is into any governmental activity, or number 5 is into the legislature and the legislative meetings. And I think it would be tremendously hypocritical of us to say that you can carry a concealed weapon any place you want, but you can't carry it to one of our meetings. So I think that one there needs to go. And then the other two are pretty simple. It just basically says, and a lot of states have this already, is that you can carry it into any school. That's a college or professional athletic event. Number 7 is, let me go on to number 9. That would also include an elementary school. Number 8 would be into any church. And then the other one that we just discussed was a little bit about right now you're not able to carry it into any portion that dispenses alcoholic liquor or malt beverages for consumption, but only in that portion where the establishment is primarily devoted for that purpose. So if you take your family out to dinner and they say it's going to be an hour wait, my understanding is that several people, you know, step up to the bar waiting for their table to become open. So then what do you do with your concealed weapon? So that is basically what it says. So if you vote for it, you'll be able to carry your concealed weapon into those particular facilities. And I think it just goes back to our Second Amendment rights. And I'd stand for any questions.
We're on committee of the whole amendment number 1. Representative Brechtel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rising against this amendment, and I can certainly appreciate where maybe some people might want to make this argument, but it really appears to me that this amendment goes well beyond the intentions of the bill sponsor and those of the Senate. If someone would really want to bring this as a bill for next session, I think that's great. We can have that discussion then. But let's not mess this bill up now with this. On and against the amendment, please vote no on this amendment, but for the bill.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the amendment, this just feels like it's not germane to the bill. The purpose of the bill is to make consistent our laws that you can carry concealed where you can carry open. It has nothing to do with changing the restrictions on where you are or are not allowed to carry. And frankly, it just kind of feels like a way to undermine the bill. So I would encourage you to vote against the amendment and for the bill.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in opposition to this amendment as well. Let's don't mess with the restrictions. Against the amendment, for the bill.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm also opposed to this amendment. I studied it last night, and I also feel the same things that have been said. This is not what this bill is about. This is about how we carry and who can carry. So if the bringer would like to bring this and discuss this, shoot, I might even get on the bill with him. But I'd urge you to vote no right now on this. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion? Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Whip. In the enacting clause, part of what we're studying on this bill is amending a restriction on where a concealed firearm may be carried. So I think that what we're doing is totally germane to the building, to the bill. The other couple things that I forgot to mention is we have left in place that says any place where carrying of firearms is prohibited by federal law or regulation or state law. And in my opinion, that would cover all those places where we don't want to have firearms carried. So I believe it's totally germane to the bill, and I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Any other discussion on the amendment? Question being called. All those in favor of committee the whole amendment number 1 to Senate File 47, please say aye. Those opposed, no. The amendment is defeated. We are back on the bill. Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and good colleagues of the 61st, we are no strangers to this bill. This will be a lot of our opportunity for our third time to vote on this particular piece of legislation. And I'm going to remind the good body, never once have we ever not voted this bill out of this House. We have a very strong sense of protecting an individual's individual rights, and in particular, the Second Amendment rights. And so this issue, as you know, is a very near and dear to me in the 7 years that I've been here. This is, you know, we're standing on the edge of a huge opportunity. When we passed the bill to carry concealed with a permit, we in essence eroded the rights of every law-abiding citizen in the state of Wyoming by taking away their right to carry concealed. The Wyoming Constitution is very clear that our Second Amendment right to bear arms shall not be infringed. And we did, in fact, infringe on that right. So this is our opportunity today to make things right with the Wyoming citizens and with all law-abiding citizens of the state of Wyoming by restoring their right to carry concealed without a permit. So on and in favor of this bill, and I ask for your favorable concurrence. Thank you.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Speaking on and against this bill, I've had some extensive conversations with law enforcement, and this body, again, is doing nothing but giving them heartburn as to doing their job. You're making it more difficult for them to go out and just go through the standard procedure of being a peace officer and wondering whether everybody that they encounter is going to be carrying and under what conditions they're going to be carrying. The other thing that this does is it takes away that series of checks and balances. One of the county sheriffs that I talked to really is concerned about that last little check between issuing this permit to an individual and just handing him a gun. I think that we have to have some checks and balances in here. You know, I'm all for Second Amendment rights. I don't care if you have 9.2 guns or 90.2 guns personally. But there comes a point where we have to have something where we have a little bit of accountability. We have to have something in the system. And frankly, this just throws the door wide open to all sorts of mischief and problems. So on and against the bill.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I mean, Mr. Whip. Ladies and gentlemen, let's think about this for a second. Right now, you can wear a gun, carry a weapon outside your body, in the open, whether you're going into McDonald's, whether you're going into the fast food places, all these other places. All this does is allow you to cover that, which I'd rather see, because I've seen lots of little kids when I've encountered these things get all excited about this gun. Some of them get scared. They're not used to that because they come from a family that doesn't do that. So whether the gun is under the coat or whatever however you're going to conceal it in their boot or whatever it is, that I think my personal opinion I'd rather see it like that than somebody walking up and down the streets wearing it on their hip. The other thing that I wanted to talk a little bit about when we're talking about these issues. The people that are going to carry the gun that law enforcement has to be worried about are those people that are going to have the gun anyway. They're the people that are out there to violate the laws. They're the people that criminals will have the guns, whether we say they can or can't have them. And it's our right to do these types of things. So, ladies and gentlemen, on and for the bill.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Webb. To me, it's kind of ridiculous the way our statute is written right now, that you can open carry, but suddenly a piece of cloth covers up the gun and it's now illegal. It's just ridiculous to say, I'm legal, I'm illegal. I'm legal, I'm illegal. And all this bill does is clear that up. It doesn't change who can carry a gun. It doesn't change where they can carry a gun. It simply says if they're carrying that gun and it's covered by a piece of cloth, there's no inconsistency anymore. On and for the bill.
Representative Ronish.
Thank you, Mr. Whip. I'm going to be really, really brief. I would just like to disagree with the good representative from this humble town. I happen to be very closely related to law enforcement. And they tell me that they support this bill. They would encourage it. And if a bad guy says it doesn't take them very long to look at a bad guy and know that he shouldn't be carrying a gun before to check him out. So I would encourage support of this bill. Let's get her done. Call for the question.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you for the debate, and I'll call for the question.
Question being called. All those in... Representative Patton.
Some people may be ready to vote. Some of us haven't had a chance to say our feelings and represent what we believe is our constituency. I really believe that our government is made as a government of laws and not of men. When I was a youngster, my father, an uneducated guy, had a sense of morals that was something that I have stuck with me. And he said, John, you're not going to take this gun, and you're never going to point it at anybody. He meant what he said, never point a gun at anybody. Now, I thought that what he was telling me is that I shouldn't carry a gun to harm somebody. It took me a little while to mature to a little bit to really understand what he was saying. That if I pointed the gun at somebody, somebody's going to get hurt, maybe killed. That somebody may be his son. So I don't carry a gun. Yes, I have them. You may now carry a gun without a permit, as we have had eloquently told to us, out in the open. And yes, if you carry it into the Walmart store or any other store, sorry for the name, or in particular in a hotel, which happened in our community, it did terrify a young boy. Why was a loaded revolver on this guy? Because he said he had the right to do that. He had the right to terrorize that young child. I don't accept that. And let's go back just a little bit in history. How did that provision get put in our Constitution? Well, it wasn't in our Constitution. It was added on after our Constitution. Our Constitution starts off with a we. We the people, not I, the gun carrier. At that particular time in our career of our history, of our nation, we were debating whether we wanted a standing army. We didn't have a standing navy. And now today we do. We have a standing army. We have the National Guard that takes the place of the old militia. The old militia, that was the army. They had to have arms if they were going to defend themselves, their people, and the cause of this nation. But with the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Marines, and in addition to that, we have the police, the sheriff, and I don't know how about you guys. I don't know about any of the rest of you. But I feel perfectly safe, and I've never carried a concealed weapon. We have a concealed weapon law that we amended last year or last 2 years so that we could have reciprocity with most all of the states in the Union. And I voted for that. I don't know why that isn't satisfactory today. I don't know why we have to have this kind of legislation that inhibits further our right to happiness, to our individual freedoms. I am on and opposed to the bill.
Representative Roscoe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the bill, I think that things are working quite well at the moment, and they have for years and years here with our gun rights. I don't see that we're going to gain any right by this. We all in this room and all of us in Wyoming have the right to carry a concealed weapon right now. All we have to do is show a little bit of responsibility that we know how to use it. And I just don't see that we're going to gain anything by this. I think if we want to carry concealed, we can. Let's just get a permit. I thought it was interesting in the debate also to see how far we wanted to take our Second Amendment rights. And we did stop before we got to the end. So on and against the bill. Thank you.
Representative Zwanister, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Against the bill also. You know, back in the 1780s or 1789, whenever the Bill of Rights went through in our first Constitution, Constitutional Amendment, you know, everybody had to have a gun to survive, without a doubt. And even when the state constitution went through in 1890s, we were still very dependent upon guns, but we were not. And this bill is not taking away our Second Amendment rights. It's just asking for somebody to please, please be responsible. I found it interesting. I was talking to a representative the other day asking him about the military. Do we just hand guns to our military and go put them on the fields? Well, no. They actually train them. They actually make sure they're qualified. And it seems like the responsible thing for us to do. You know, we had a really tragic incident down in Arizona not too many months ago. And I don't know, just kind of imagine if we had 6 or 8 people there with concealed weapons. And I know there was a person there with a concealed weapon, but if we had 6 or 8 people, how many shooters would we really have had in that incident? I mean, what would have happened if everybody decided to pull their gun out? How many people? I don't know. Maybe nothing would have happened. It scares me. I just know in my district and the people that I talk to, there's probably 50-50. You know, a lot of people are really for this law and a lot of them aren't. But in the cities, you know, that I represent, there's a lot of people that are just scared to death when somebody says gun. I mean, jump right under a chair. So I think what we're asking is that we have a law in place and let's stay with it. Let's just keep guns in responsible people's hands. And that's what the concealed weapon permit does. It allows anybody to have a gun if they're responsible. So I would ask that you vote no.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you. Just want to calm a little bit of fear. Vermont's had this, and I just don't hear all these things. I have talked to some law enforcement who are very much in favor of this, so we could go back and forth. But pursuant to House Rule 13-3, I'd like to call for the ayes and nays.
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative McComey's motion that when committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 74 do pass. The chief clerk will please call the roll.
Barbudo.
No.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
Aye.
Flickrey. Bonner,
aye.
Botten,
aye.
Brechtel,
aye.
Brown,
aye.
Burkhart,
aye.
Bird,
no.
Campbell,
aye.
Kennedy,
aye.
Childers,
aye.
Connolly,
no.
Kraft,
no.
Davison excused, Edmonds,
aye.
Eklund,
aye.
Esquibel,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer, Green,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
aye.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparic excused, Croker,
aye.
Crone,
aye.
Lockhart excused, Laux,
aye.
Lubno,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
McComey,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Patton,
no.
Peasley,
aye.
Pedersen excused, Peterson,
aye.
Petroff, Korberg,
aye.
Roscoe,
no.
Simlick,
aye.
Shepperson,
aye.
Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Braunisch.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 48 ayes, 8 no, 4 excused.
Senate File 47 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 107. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 107, introduced by Senator Meyer, an act relating to counties' energy-impacted county roads program. This bill was sent to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace.
Representative Throne. Oh, okay. You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Berger?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 107 do pass. I will defer the explanation of the bill to the good sponsors, but before we do that, if I could just go ahead and move my standing committee amendment. I'd like to do that. So I'd like to move Standing Committee Amendment 1 to Senate File 107. And ladies and gentlemen, what that does is on page 5 of the bill, on line 10, it's in regards to the grant process. And basically what that paragraph says is, a county which knowingly and intentionally provides false information on its application under the program shall not be eligible to receive a grant under the program. And that's what our amendment does. It ends with the program period, and we took out that they could apply again in 2 years. We decided if they were negligent the first time around that there would be no opportunity for a second chance. And then the second component is that we added another paragraph, which is K under line 17 on page 5, that funds from the program shall not be used to hire more county employees, that this was for surface projects of county roads. And if there are no questions, I'll call for the question.
You have heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The standing committee amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Representative Berger.
And Mr. Chairman, thank you, and I'll defer to the good Minority Whip Throne.
Madam Minority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll give you a brief overview of the bill because I know we have some Committee of the Whole amendments coming. This bill is a combined effort of a number of folks. As I think most of the body is aware, we are anticipating some oil activity in parts of the state that have never seen oil and gas activity. They have roads designed primarily for agricultural use, and while down the road these counties hope to benefit from future tax revenues, they are not wealthy enough at this point in time to protect their roads and be prepared for the impacts. It's a lot different to have a few trucks going down the road, a few agricultural vehicles, compared to huge oil and gas vehicles. And so the purpose of this is to allow the SLIB board to provide grants. I think, as the body is aware, when we have industrial development involving large sort of single facilities like wind or power plants or huge gas plants, they fall under the Industrial Siting Act, which triggers impact assistance to local governments to pay for the expenses of development before the tax revenue starts rolling in. There's nothing comparable for oil and gas. A number of counties around the state have experienced issues related to oil and gas development, and this is a modest effort to provide some impact assistance up front for what is always a major impact. I think, as all of you know, I am from the Powder River country, and it used to be that we always had to drive our pickup down the county roads, because if you drove your car down the county roads, it would probably fall in a pothole never to be seen again. So we want to prevent that kind of impact to the extent we can. And there are a couple of Committee of the Whole amendments, but I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Chairman Ulloway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 107. And it's found on page 5, lines 7 through 10. And I'm proposing to take out paragraph that says, a county which knowingly and intentionally provides false information on its application under the program shall not be eligible to receive a grant under the program. Come on, folks. Let's take that out. Where are we going to find the 23 counties which knowingly and intentionally provide false information on its application? They're not going to do that. We're calling them crooks if they do. This is wrong. This is a wrong paragraph in here. I call for the question on that amendment.
Question being called. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill. Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And ladies and gentlemen, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2 to Senate File 107. Would ask for your favorable aye. I distributed a little color sheet that went around. Everybody should have it in their inbox. If everybody could take it out and just look at it. It's front and back. This is 6 miles of road in Goshen County that I was on 10 days ago, and the road was perfectly fine. And this is what we're facing in this impact area. We have had 8 wells drilled in the Goshen Hole area so far. One of the major producers intends on drilling several hundred by the end of 2014 in that area. As you can see by these pictures, this road has spontaneously disintegrated. And what happened was we had some warm weather last week, and the frost from underneath the road went out. This road was designed for pickup trucks, small loads of hay. It was not designed for 300 loads of gravel on 380,000 pound loads a day, which is what we're experiencing on this road. Essentially, it's for us to fix this road, just this one road, is going to cost the entire $6 million that this bill appropriates. And as I look at what happened in the Sublette country, the state did come to their rescue. We did provide some impact assistance, but there was a lot of damage and a lot of mayhem before the state finally stepped up to the plate to forward those poor counties some revenue. The amendment today that I propose is increasing the amount from $6 million to $12 million. It's still probably woefully inadequate to try and deal with the impacts that we're going to experience in the 3 counties. The other interesting thing about this play is we're in Sublette County, we were looking at the Jonah Field, which was approximately a 60,000 acre field. This play has the potential to be over 1 million acres. So it's going to be spread out. It's going to stretch probably 120 miles long. And I think it's irresponsible for this body to wait until we have been raped and pillaged before we step up to the plate and provide the impact assistance that's necessary. If we wait until next session, which was the recommendation of the executive on the first level, to study this, it will be too little and too late. The original bill, Senate File 107, when it was introduced to the Senate, provided an appropriation of $20 million. I'm trying to get us back to half of that. And I would ask for your favorable consideration on the amendment.
We are on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2. Is there any further discussion? Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With much sympathy and all due respect to the bringers of this measure, as a coming from a county that has seen quite a lot of impact, there's no question there's a need. But I think that what needs to happen is that the county commissioners in the areas that are affected need to step up to the plate and hold these companies accountable. That's what happens in my county. And that's what happens in lots of other counties. I think it's appropriate for us to to offer some assistance, but really I think that it's a bit too far to expect the entire state of Wyoming to pick up the bill for these companies when it is their activities that are creating the damage to the roads.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I could not agree more, and that's why I didn't come forward with an appropriation for $100 million. The counties are doing the best job they can to work out road use agreements, and I met with my county commissioners before I came down here, and that was before we actually were seeing these real sorts of impacts that are really starting to hit home. And I told them, I said, you are going to have to sit down with these companies and work out road use agreements. They're going to do that. The bottom line is I don't expect the state of Wyoming to fix all the roads. My hope is that in 24 months we'll have the revenue to be able to take care of ourselves. My concern is that my wife and kids are going to be traveling down this road that's currently closed, and we're going to have accidents if we don't deal with this. It would take half of my county budget to fix this road. We cannot do it. The need in my community is greater than those of you that come from impacted areas because you have more assessed value in 3 acres of your coal mine than I do in my entire county. So I say this is an emergency, this is a special situation, and I would ask for your support.
Madam Minority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This legislature has in the past helped impacted counties to the tune of $105 million in the 2006 legislative session. So again, even with the Committee of the Whole amendment, this is a modest appropriation to deal with emergency situations. The problem with, you know, dealing with individual companies is it can solve part of the problem. It can't solve the whole problem because there are cumulative impacts. The first truck doesn't cause the problem. The 10th truck most likely will. I have some estimates that were provided from my county ranging of a cost per mile on various roads in our county that need some assistance to deal with oil and gas development of ranging from $355,000 per mile to $371,000 per mile. So $12 million is not going to go very far. The SLID board will probably have to prioritize. You know, certainly the smaller counties with less assessed value are in the more immediate need. But we are talking about oil and gas development in areas that have been primarily agricultural and residential. And the need is immediate, but it is a modest request, even with the Committee of the Whole amendment.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the amendment, Committee of the Whole amendment number two. Folks, I think as we start this new program, first of all, we're going to have to go to emergency rules to write rules. So it's going to be sometime into late June, probably, before we can actually even start spending money. And before we can take grants, figure out who's going to get the money, the whole thing. So I just think, once again, we'll be back here. We'll know more on assessed valuation and tax revenues for those counties. This is a good start. It'll probably be more before it's over with. But I don't think the more needs to come today. And I think we'll have time to consider this. So I'd urge your no vote on amendment number two. Thank you.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we do wait until next session, I don't know what the consequences of that will be. The issue is that even if we get to it by this June, that means that we'll be actually able to fix some of these roads and repair some of this damage between June and February of the following year. That's the real issue for me. If I thought there was time for us to wait until the budget session in the next year, I would definitely not be screaming from the rafters saying this is an emergency. But this is an emergency, and I would ask for your support.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you. I rise in support of this. I came to Wyoming during the boom. My family had been here 5 generations before I got here, but my father went out with one of the busts, and I came back. I spent a lot of time at the University of Wyoming studying the boom and bust cycles, and the money needs to be at the front of the boom cycle, not at the middle, not at the end. And I think that this will save us a lot of money in the future. So I encourage your support of this bill.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I would echo what the previous speaker said. If we spend a little bit of money now, we can avoid a lot of costs later. This road right now has some potholes that can be fixed. And if we don't do something quick, I saw the road also, and it's not a safe road anymore. And it was a good road before. And I guess if a little money spent now will save quite a bit of money later. It looks to me like their other option is to push the pavement out of the way and turn it into a gravel road, which would be very costly later on. Thank you.
Chairman Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Government always reacts. We don't ever seem to get proactive around here. If we were proactive, we would have done this 2 years ago and said, there's a boom coming. We need to get something done because we know what's going to happen. We don't ever do that. So I say have a heart. And if you don't want to spend the money for this road, then let's also tell them they can have all the severance tax from it. We won't take it. And I imagine the sponsor of this bill would ride horseback until the money came in. If you wanted to do it that way, so on and for the amendment.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I looked at these pictures from the good representative, my first thought was, gee, this isn't too bad. And the reason I thought that is I've seen worse, and this will get worse. You will bury semis in these holes that it'll take bulldozers to pull out. When it rains, you'll have no road left. And I would encourage you to vote for this bill. These counties need the money now. I've seen what the lack of money will do, and these roads will become impassable to those people who need them just merely to get home, to get to town, to get groceries, to get their children to and from school. So I'd encourage you to vote aye on the amendment.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have to join into the parade of saying the same thing over and over and over again. There's a period of time where we used to have a bumper sticker up in my neighborhood that said, live dangerously, drive Highway 59. And the highway looked a lot like that road. And those were very dangerous times. Well, you've got to ask yourself, what are the core functions of government? What is it that government should be doing as its core function? Building roads, providing public safety, providing infrastructure. This is one of the essential core functions of our government is providing roads. And it's an investment. We all know the statistics. We can either pay $12 million now or we can pay $24 million next year, but we're going to pay. And the nice thing about this investment is, in time, through severance taxes, the money comes back to us, and it comes back to us even more. And nothing would make me happier than seeing these three counties become rebated recapture districts. So I have some other friends on the floor. So I would urge support of this bill and this amendment.
Are you ready for the question? Having been called, all in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill. Question having been called, all those in favor of Representative Berger's motion that when Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 107 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate File 107 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 121. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 121, introduced by Senator Bebout. An act relating to environmental quality, performance-based evaluation and design. This bill was sent to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Byrd, Greer, Kasparic, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson. No, Zwanitzer, Dan, Zwanitzer, Dave. Further, it was sent to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace, No, Escobel, excused, Edmonds, sign Representative Berger, chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Vice Chairman Stubson?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 121 do pass. And for explanation of the bill, I'll turn it over to the good representative from Park County.
Chairman Childers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring you Senate File 121, Performance-Based Evaluation and Design. This is basically a bill that's asking for, call it an engineering study of permitted landfills that does not incorporate an engineered containment system, as noted on page 2, utilizing a composite liner and leachate collection system. And it's saying that they shall submit a report with the application. And the report shall contain the applicant's findings as to the proposed performance-based design compliance with applicable state and federal laws and regulations. And it, as I said before, it's an engineering study. And it's basically asking that the administrator shall prepare a detailed performance evaluation based on applied scientific and engineering data that adheres to the WS 3511-504, or 524, which is your next section. It does allow for some appeals of the administrator's determination in the evaluation, and going to 3511-524, the actual evaluation criteria, you'll note on page 4 that it does ask that you do ensure that the concentration values of pollutants listed meet drinking water, or wait a minute. Anyway, the drinking water regulations will not be exceeded. Doing an engineered containment system that utilizes a composite ladder and a leachate collection system that's designed and constructed to maintain less than a 30-centimeter depth of leachate over the liner. And that design is basically takes into consideration the hydrogeologic characteristics of the facility and the surrounding land. In other words, the geologic formation, the climatic factors of the area, and the physical and chemical characteristics and volume of the leachate. And one thing that this particular study does say, that the administrator consider the concentration values for pollutants. It shall be no more than 150 meters from the waste management boundary. One of the things we found out with these designs is they go some distance away from the landfill, further than 150 meters, and take those into consideration for the landfill, and it's really unnecessary to do that. You try to contain it in the area that the landfill is being designed and how it would be impacted. You have to determine the quantity, quality, and direction of the flow of groundwater in their area. And the withdrawal rate of the groundwater users. Sorry for being so slow. I'm not thinking too well today. Maybe that's normal. Huh?
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Proceed, Representative Greer.
Yeah, I'll just assist the good chair from revenue. This bill is just real simply stated, it is an alternative. Believe it or not, there are maybe some landfills in the state of Wyoming that do not need to have a liner. And this is just an option in our statutes for those districts or those landfills to come in and with a statistically valid engineering study and report, when they come in with their application to have a new landfill or a lateral addition to their landfill, to say, hey, because of where we're located, the soil types we have, the water tables we have, where we're located, and we do not need to have this liner. And that's just going to be, that study is going to be put in with their application, and that will be determined by the Department of Environmental Quality if they are correct. And there is an appeal process, as was stated, to go through that. This is simply just an option to allow those landfills that do not need to have a liner to be able to go ahead and prove that they don't and move forward with a landfill without one. Thank you.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Representative Vice Chair Stubson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 121 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Senate File 121 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 143. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 143, introduced by Senator Bebout, an act relating to public funds, federal natural resource policy. This bill was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Greer, Kasperi, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Swanitzer, Dave, No, Byrd, Swanitzer, Dan, signed Representative Lockhart, Chairman. It was further sent to the Appropriations Committee Number 2, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Escobel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace, excused, Edmonds, signed Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Vice Chair Stubson?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 143 do pass, and I'll go ahead and explain the bill. This measure is really aimed at one particular action of the federal government that we've seen over recent months, and that is the adoption of an order by the Secretary of Interior that allows for certain wildlands designations. And you may have seen correspondence from the executive about this. But what this bill does in short is that it appropriates $250,000 to the FINERPA account. And on pages 2 and 3, you'll see that it allows specifically for the state agencies or counties to use that appropriation to address these wildlands designations. And what we've seen, and I think it's a legitimate criticism, is that the wildlands designation is really a way to skirt around legislative activity that would designate wilderness areas. What you get is a de facto wilderness designation with all the restrictions, in fact, more restrictions than you have on wilderness areas, and you don't have the regular due process, you don't have the regular legislative process that hashes out what areas are appropriate and what areas are not. And you see across the state really substantial potential impacts from this. We heard about one forest management plan in the northwest part of the state that was looking really at about 500,000 acres that were potentially subject. Obviously, those won't all be included, but we're being looked at for these wildlands designations. And so This $250,000 really just gives the state and our local governments the ability to not only challenge those designations in court if need be, but also to gather evidence to participate and to challenge this effort really to make de facto wilderness areas within the state. You'll see, importantly, that the appropriation is only for a year period from, and in June, on June 30th, 2012, if the money has not been expended, it will revert back. But it does give another tool that we need to be able to control activities within our own state to promote multiple use and to really make sure that these sort of extra legislative activities that are intended to bind up land don't occur without us having any say in it. So with that, I'd take questions.
Representative Lawrence or Dan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would strongly speak against this bill. It does two things. I know we talked a lot about wildlands, but you won't see that word anywhere in this bill. Section 2, it basically sets up an account of $250,000 that no one, it sets up a state-funded account from state general funds that nobody but the counties can tap into over the next year. And it doesn't mention the wildlands issue. It just says anything in the next year that they want to file litigation. And if they know that we have an account there that has no other purpose than for them to tap into it, trust me, they're all going to come after it and try to tap into it. The more dangerous part of this bill is in Section 1, where we're now going to, for the first time, allow counties to come and, I guess, at their discretion to apply for NERPA funds. And they can do this in a process already with the governor. They can apply to the governor's office for NERPA funds to use for any of their studies they may want to deal with federal land management. We've just passed another bill that we passed on third reading this morning that basically sets up the state government having to do these economic analysis surveys for them at the state level to help out the counties in this process. Now we're going to set aside another $250,000 for the counties to tap into to sue perhaps more in this process. I know Section 2 just says it's for a year, but the law change we're making in Section 1 is basically it's this weird thing we're going to do where the Attorney General can come to the governor or the counties can come to the governor, and the counties in some way, shape, or form can use state money, but if their goals are not the same goals of the state, it strikes me as a really bad policy decision on the instances where they could come request state funds to fight a federal action at the same time, and they may fight it on a totally different front than the Wyoming Department of Agriculture or the Game and Fish or the Wyoming Department of Environmental Quality. You know, may side with the federal government on one of these actions. I know that doesn't happen very often, but it certainly could. And it seems like a bad policy move, in my idea, to allow the counties access to these funds when they could be hiring attorneys that would be saying something contrary than the attorneys that the state is hiring that's also using these funds. And I know we can do that a little bit with school districts now, and we've had some other problems. But I just don't think this is the step we want to go. I wasn't sure this morning when we passed economic analysis that was a step we wanted to go, but I conceded that this year and said maybe the state has a role in giving the counties all this information to sue. But now we're basically going to say, well, we've given you the information the state's going to provide, and now we're going to give you a pot of money separately and distinct just for you counties that you can sue on your own. And I would ask you to resist this bill. Thank you.
Chairman Semlick.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. In response to the last speaker, I don't find the bear behind every bush in the details of this proposal. I wish we wouldn't find ourselves in the position that we find ourselves in this state, in many of the western states, where our state government and our local governments have to advocate for the interests of our minerals and of our agricultural people because of the initiatives that the federal government has taken against the ability for Wyoming to use its natural resources in multiple different ways. So I think this is just, we passed rangeland assessments a couple of years ago. We did economic analysis, as the former speaker said. Those are, again, I wish we wouldn't find ourselves in this place, but we do. We need to provide tools and resources and funding for our local governments to help assist in this war that we have against Wyoming in the use of our resources. So I would ask you to support this bill.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for this bill,
You know, this is not a lot of money. And frankly, the counties need some help. And frankly, the counties are the ones that are on the front line of this issue in several cases. You know, getting involved in the NEPA process and the FLTMA process. And, you know, I can't even come to think of all the acronyms that the feds operate under. I think they try to confuse us on purpose. But again, when they stealthily sneak in legislation like this to designate wilderness areas here and there, you know, again, it sounds wonderful. It's all apple pie and mother and, you know, maybe even a car that's made in Detroit. I don't know. But it's just crazy, the appeal that goes on. And this affects every one of these federal actions affects the livelihood, our livelihood, here in Wyoming. And we're down here, again, freely spending the money. Where does this money come from? You know, if we do what some of these folks back in Washington and New York want to do, we're not going to have any lands left in Wyoming to produce natural resources from to pay all our taxes. So, again, this is a tiny, tiny little pushback to allow the counties a little bit of revenue to join in the planning process to truly designate what lands should be open for mineral production, what lands should be closed, what lands should we close these roads off even. You know, I heard someone comment earlier about some federal agency closing off their favorite 4x4 roads. They're doing this right and left all the time. You got to give our counties the tools to help push back on some of this stuff. So on and for the bill.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaking from a county that is 82% public lands and 80% of that is federal lands, I can tell you that we have five federal agencies that control land in our county. And we work on when they reorganize, when they redo their management plans. And our county commissioners are kept hopping all the time. And when you talk about county commissioners, all three of our county commissioners are retired. And one was a carpenter, one was a car mechanic, and I can't remember what the other one did. These people do not have the expertise to fight this fight. From the federal government that has the resources, that writes the rules, and we're also dealing with a situation where a housewife in New Jersey has the same weight, her letter has the same weight as the governor of Wyoming when it comes to they're each just simply one comment in a comment period. And so when you're talking about fighting the fight, the first line of defense is in the counties. If they do not have the funds, if they do not have the resources to hire the experts, and believe me, our county has used assistance from the governor's office, and it's been freely given. It's been freely, I mean, they're right there with us in fighting this fight. But I got to tell you, without the resources, this is a dead fight, and we will see less bentonite mined, we will see less coal mined, we will see less recreation, we will see more federal rules imposed upon us if we don't have the tools and the resources to fight back. I would urge your aye vote on this bill.
Before we proceed, is there anybody else who is going to testify against the bill? Representative Berg, are you going to? Okay. Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a question here, and that was, is it possible to have some kind of a participating arrangement with the county so that they have some involvement? The way I read this, it just looks like they can make a phone call
and say, take over for us. And I just wonder if there's some skin in the game, or if somebody can tell me why that's not reasonable in a case like this. I would be willing to see, to accede to it. But I just was wondering if we do this a lot, where there'll be a match or something like that, or some kind of a participating arrangement. And if the sponsor can just give some discussion on that, then I'm ready, I guess. Thank you.
Representative Zlonitzer, Dan.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of responses and some background on this issue. Most of what I heard in the testimony, the counties can already do. We have a fund set up. They can come petition the governor at any time and ask for some money for any of these studies. What we're allowing them to do with this bill is to tap into retaining qualified practicing attorneys to act for their county. And I guess my concern is that's a big step when we start, allowing county, if their county finds an attorney that's contrary to the state attorney general's office and one of their attorneys, it seems like a bad use of government. And what we've done, and I think we've had a lot of good steps in this area, but it was only 10, 12 years ago we even let counties in on these processes, on these RMPs and EISs, before it was just government entities at the state and federal level. We let counties into the process. That was a great thing. They got to come to the table in these closed-door meetings. But they came to the table for a couple of years, and they said, we don't have the expertise, and we don't really know what to do now that we're at the table. And so over the last 5 or 6 years, we've gone above and beyond, in my opinion, at the state level especially, with state agencies really helping out the counties over the last couple of years, saying, here's what you should talk about. Here's how you can, agree with what the state departments are putting out. Here's how we can all get along. Here's how we can have a more defined, solid position. And now that hasn't been enough yet either. So now the counties have come back in the last year and say, well, not only we still don't totally have this figured out and we don't have the resources at our county, so state, please do all the economic analysis data for us so we can use. And now also, state government, can you come and allow us the opportunity that we can retain our own attorneys to sue the federal government? And I mean, it's a policy decision, and I'm not going to have a major heartburn if this bill goes through. I just wanted the discussion to really ask if this is the correct process, and if we're going to appropriate money specifically just for counties to use. We're putting money in the FNRPA account, but it's somehow separate from the main corpus of the account that counties can use only for litigation. And, if we don't have that much money in the account and the state has a better legitimate interest than the counties do, we can't get to that money, but the counties can. There probably are some ways, shapes, and forms where we would have a stronger defensible position with a certain county arguing against a federal land action. But I think if that ever happens, the county then has a responsibility as the county commissioners to take on that lawsuit, to find the funds, to not, come ask the state for help. So they can do that now. They can come ask the state for money for all the information and surveys and help they need. They've been doing that for a decade. The state has been helping them out. I sat through a couple of these. Not that I'd say we've held the hand of the counties, but we have tried valiantly, I think, at the state level to help the counties out. The problem really happens when you have multiple counties affected and the counties don't agree. We have a problem. And then the counties come and say, this county wants this attorney, but that may not be the same interest as the other county. So then is the state going to provide funds for both counties to sue on two different fronts? It opens a lot to a lot of places I don't think we should go, and thank you for letting me respond.
Representative Stepson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to respond to a couple of the questions and concerns, I think this sort of parade of horribles you heard can't materialize given the language that we have in the bill. And that is that, first of all, this isn't a county-only mechanism. If you look at the language on page 2, it can be counties. It can be counties in the state. It can be counties in state agencies. It can be all three. It really depends upon the circumstances, the area impacted, and what makes sense. And there's a gatekeeper on this process. That's the other thing to keep in mind. If you look at page 3, line 20, none of this happens. None of this money gets released. Nothing happens unless the governor looks at it and says it does fit with the state's interests. It does fit with what the attorney general and others are doing. It's only when the governor, who's looking at looking at it in a sort of universal light, thinks that it makes sense for counties to have access to this money, that any of it is released. There was a comment that wildlands doesn't appear in the bill, and that's true. And I just wanted to point you to page 4 lines 4 and 5 talks about the executive, the order number 3310 of the Secretary of Interior. And that's really, I mean, the genesis of this whole thing, and the thing that I would just pound on one more time. I mean, we have a mechanism in law that if the federal government wants to set up wilderness areas, it can do that. And it's a legislative process. And they bring it to Congress. And our congressional delegation can fight that and can plead our case and can argue. And if we lose those political battles, we lose them. What Order 3310 did is a stroke of a pen in an oak-paneled room somewhere in D.C. has the potential to impact hundreds of thousands of acres across our state, has the potential to impact the livelihoods of our people. And we should be able to have a say in that. And we should have resources both at the state and local level to talk about those issues. And that's what this bill does. And so I'd urge your support.
Are you ready for the question? Chairman Brown? Thank wolves and vote for this bill. Question being called. All those in favor of Vice Chairman Stubson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate file do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate file 143 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate file 70. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 70, introduced by School Finance, an act relating to public education, education accountability. This bill was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, which recommended a do pass with amendments. Ayes, Brechtel, Burkhart, Connolly, Freeman, Croker, Crone, Laux, Madden, Teeters. Signed, representing Teeters, Chairman. The bill was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended a do pass. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Stewart, Wallace. Excuse, Pedersen, sign representing Berger, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Teeters?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 70 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. I will explain the Standing Committee Amendment. It's very extensive, 2-3 pages long, deals with many different aspects in the bill. As I explain the bill, I will explain the Standing Committee Amendment and call for the question at the appropriate time. Senate File 70 is the last of the big education bills that we'll be considering this year, and I can tell you I'm very much looking forward to that. The bill, basically, why does the bill exist? After 15 years of massively increasing education funding, the legislature has concluded that student achievement is, in general, not where we would like it to be. The Select Committee on School Finance Recalibration, which was composed mostly of legislative leadership, determined that a change in focus was necessary. We met every month over the course of the last year. It was something like 25 meetings. It was just unbelievable, the amount of time and work that went into this piece of legislation. The committee has shifted its focus from the amount of money being appropriated to the return on investment that is being obtained by this appropriation. And we have generally felt those conversations evolve since I've been elected 5 years ago. And really this whole thing has come to a head with this piece of legislation. This bill develops an accountability system that measures student achievement and links that achievement to teachers, principals, and administrators with rewards and sanctions for districts depending on the results. And this is going to bring our educational system, I believe, into new focus. The Senate significantly modified portions of the committee bill to address stakeholders' concerns. The legislation, in my opinion, is really in pretty good shape. Key features of the bill. We create a new section on page 2 called the Wyoming Accountability in Education Act. The bill encompasses a two-phase approach. Phase 1 is established by the legislature and implemented by the Wyoming Department of Education. And phase 2 establishes a select committee on school accountability, creates an advisory committee that will provide assistance to the select committee, and develops a long-term accountability system, including a full review of phase 1. Phase 1 was really the genesis behind phase 1 is that we wanted to get something in place for the 11-12 school year so we could kind of get people ready for what's going to happen. and it establishes core indicators of student performance at the school level using tools that are already in place in all the districts. This is on page 2 through 5. These include 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade reading as measured by the statewide assessment, 8th grade standardized curriculum based on college readiness testing, which we call the ACT Explore Test, measured by percentage of students meeting or exceeding college benchmarks readiness scores for each subject area, including math, English, reading, and science. We had reading out for a while, and the Senate returned reading in that portion. 11th, we also, in phase one, will be looking at 11th grade curriculum-based college readiness, which is the ACT test that we all take. The state currently pays for and mandates that all students take ACT, as well as the statewide summative assessment and the ACT Explore. So these measures are already in place. We'll be using those for year one. On the 11th grade standardized ACT score, we're going to measure by a percentage of students meeting or exceeding the college benchmark readiness score for each subject area in English, math, science, and reading, similar to what the way we will implement the ACT Explore. WDE will compute the combined scores of the schools for each core indicator and measure improvements from year to year, so we'll be able to have a spreadsheet of where everybody is. We will have 3 specific areas of targets for core indicators, and that will be progressive progress, which appears on page 5, which simply means it's better than the score from the year before. Performance of a level that is unchanged, which obviously means stagnant, your district didn't improve, or go negative. And negative progress, which is a worse score than the year before. The Wyoming Department of Education is to adopt rules and regulations to establish a matrix for reporting. Commencing in school year 2012 and 13, for a first year of failure to meet the target of improvement level, districts will be required to report to the Wyoming Department of Education and perform a performance acceleration plan. Basically, the districts will have to go forward and say, we didn't make any improvement this year, and this is our plan so that we will have improvement the next year. The Wyoming Department of Education is going to report that information to the Joint Education Committee as well as the Joint Appropriations Committee. For the second year of subsequent failure to meet the targets for improvement, the Wyoming Department of Educational Technical Assistance Team that will be created in this legislation will help the district develop a turnaround strategy and will have the authority to impose criteria on district allocation of resources. So they'll be able to go into their budgets and look and see how they're choosing to spend their money, what resources they're using, and then the department would have the authority to go in and say, you're not hiring tutors, okay? The model's allocating for our tutors, and the state's paying for it, and you're not hiring them. So one of the strategies, now that you're failing after the second year, will be now you have to use tutors. It's pretty simple. There's nothing punitive in that. We're not going to take any resources away from anyone. It's just a matter of the point is that they're going to work collaboratively to form a turnaround strategy. That's on page 8 and 9. Also on page 9, the State Board will also consider failure to meeting target levels in the accelerated process. Phase 2, which is what we'll be developing with the Select Committee. This will be for school years 13, 14, and thereafter. This is where we will develop the long-term accountability system on page 9. And on page 10, we will require WDE to establish longitudinal data systems to provide reporting on all aspects of the Accountability Act. Right now, we don't really have data systems in place, and this will take some time to accomplish. On page 14, we will require the State Board of Education to implement and enforce the new system. We create the Select Committee on Statewide Education Accountability on page 23 and 24. These are the folks that are going to actually come up with the recommendations for the new system, and their work will include a full review of phase one and any recommendations for change, including the appropriateness and rigor of the core indicators on page 27, a review of the necessary modifications to the statewide assessment and statewide growth assessment and use of the assessments that are administered locally. We're going to take a look at assessments in general. We've got, in my opinion, too many tests. Some of them duplicate things. We're going to, in this bill also, we adopted a bill that actually went through this body from the good representative from Laramie County that will reduce PAWS to the bare minimum requirements of federal law. As we move forward with assessment, we will be developing assessment based on what information we want to have. The assessment system that we have right now was designed by Wyoming teachers, but we had a lot of consultants involved in the creation of that test, and through that process it became unwieldy, unpractical, and quite frankly a failure on the ground. And so we're going to be reworking assessment in general. Also on page 29 in the development of phase two, we're going to be, it is essentially will be predicated upon institutional practices and development of necessary data, established measures of teaching practice and the effectiveness of teachers, principals, and administrators, which I think is absolutely critical. As we move forward, we're going to have to make sure that principals are the CEOs of their buildings and that they take responsibility for the outcomes of their staff and their students. And we will be applying in measured performance with consequences and incentives. These are all things that are going to be discussed in the future. It was not possible to work them all right now, and so the Select Committee will be taking up many of these issues through the interim. During the budget session next year, we will have another large package of legislation probably that will implement the ideas that come from the process developed in Phase 2. And then we'll be reporting back in 2012 on page 30. That's the bill that will be created from the work of the Select Committee during the interim. Additional features that are not specifically linked to either Phase 1 or Phase 2, we added some things as we went along that made sense. Effective school year 12 and 13 on page 2, the Wyoming Department of Education shall receive scores for each student on benchmark adaptive testing in districts, and those scores will be linked to teachers, schools, and districts as directed by the State Board rules and regs. As we continue to develop that information, we'll be able to effectively look at which teachers are growing students and how much over a continuum of time. It's going to be very, very useful information for instructional facilitators, principals, as well as policymakers like ourselves. The Wyoming Department of Education longitudinal data system will link student achievement and teachers with teachers of record and relevant school principals. And we're still going to have a lot of work this summer to help define teacher of record. That's really which teacher is spending how much time with each student. Sounds like it'd be a pretty simple thing, but when you get right down to it, it's very, very hard to track. We will be refining that. There are states that have made progress on that, and we'll be looking at that. The State Board will also align statewide assessment components with the accountability system. That's one of the things I was talking about before. With PAWS, we're looking at replacing the current body of evidence system with more of a end-of-course exam. You know, these are all ideas that have come out of this session, and we have really been, I would say, very proactive at putting everything on the table and considering everything as we move forward to improve the quality of education in Wyoming. This bill encompasses that work. Effective school year 12 and 13 through the benchmark adaptive assessment administrated at the district level, the State Board shall establish statewide standards for assessing student growth in math, reading, and all K-8 students. If you'll recall, the majority floor leader had a bill that dealt with growth model testing. That bill was placed on the bottom of the list across the hall, and so we rolled that bill into this piece of legislation also. This has kind of become the omnibus education bill. And so a lot of the ideas that worked their way through my committee were worked through on the other side and then rolled into this legislation as well. But they've been well vetted. Effective 2012 and 13 also, we were going to have the standards that are established by the assessing of the student growth and math in reading for all KA students. These systems will be separate but correlated with the assessment system, and that goes back to the fact that all of our assessment needs to be communicating and it all needs to have purpose. We need to eliminate duplicative testing. In 2011 and 2012, on page 31, the State Board will pilot a statewide benchmark adaptive assessment. The results will be used in the establishment of student achievement level alignment with statewide summative assessments and performance target levels for 12 and 13. The State Board was also tasked with developing a statewide multiple-choice standardized summative assessment meeting the minimum requirements of No Child Left Behind on page 32, which should really cut down on the amount of time, classroom time, and prep time that's being used for the PAWS test. The House Standing Committee Amendment deals with a component of the statewide assessment. This is where we rolled that in, as I explained before. It will be fully implemented in 2012 and 13. The State Board shall also develop an alternative to the current body of evidence system, as I spoke about earlier, and that appears on page 32. That's also in the House Standing Committee Amendment. And the bill also provides for the use of unexpended, unobligated funds that were left over from the recalibration to be used for professional services. This requires approval of the Management Council in combination with House Bill 127 benchmark studies. There's also $75,000 appropriated from the same funds for the expense of the Select Committee. That's travel and per diem. The Act is effective immediately, except for changes to the statewide assessment, which are effective the following July 1st. And with that, that's a brief overview of the functionality of the bill. I would be happy to stand for any questions on specifics.
Chairman Holloway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have one question. It's an interesting bill. I don't see the carrot and the stick. I don't know how you're going to get, maybe you've got agreement, but there's an awful lot of work, it looks like, for the State Board and the Department of Education. I suppose they're going to want more people, and it looks like you guys are going to be awful busy. How are you going to get it all done, and do you have agreement from these people to get this done in a timely fashion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do appreciate the question. You know, we've been working closely with the people on the state, the people that are the liaison for the State Board, as well as the Department of Education. We have good buy-in from the educational community as well. It is going to be a daunting task to develop this system. I'm hopeful that we'll have something more concrete in place by next session, but I fully anticipate this is going to be an ongoing process, several years. That's why we created the phase one to be implemented immediately, because it measures just a few small things that we can all agree upon. And as we develop a more comprehensive system, it will take time, but we do have buy-in.
Chairman Teeters, would you like to move the amendment?
I have moved the Standing Committee Amendment, and if there are no further questions, I would call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Question being called on the Standing Committee Amendment number one. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The Standing Committee Amendment number one has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Chairman Teeters.
I would stand for questions before I move on to Committee of the Whole Amendments.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have another question. Just in looking at the bill, it seems to be clearly aimed at low-performing schools. And I was just trying to think through its application. If you've got a school that's a consistently high-performing school, you know, it doesn't have the room to move up that maybe other schools have. Does this bill provide a mechanism to prevent focusing resources on those it would be fairly easy for them, I think, to meet the definition of negative progress. I mean, is there a safety valve in here that keeps us from, you know, assigning teams to them and that sort of thing when really, you know, it's just a numbers game and maybe they don't need that improvement?
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, and I appreciate the question. I think the safety that I feel in that is the fact that this full implementation of phase one will not occur until for 2 years, because everybody gets at least 1 year to show a plan for improvement. And really, as the good coach says, we're kind of building an airplane while it's in flight. And so the Select Committee is going to consider that, obviously, during the interim. We need to be able to measure growth, but at the same time, those that are proficient shouldn't be penalized for lack of growth. I agree. Nothing in this bill will do that, because during the interim, the common sense will prevail, and we will have developed it to that point. Really, what we're trying to get at right now is the bottom of the performing schools that need new strategies for instruction. But a lot of these issues will be worked out as we go.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, if you turn on page 4, and I guess this is really where the question to my colleague from Natrona County, but and just to kind of, and I appreciate the good chairman of education. He did a great job explaining a long and complicated bill in many ways. But just to give you a little history, last year it was this House of Representatives that really insisted on accountability being studied in the interim with the recalibration efforts. It was through our budget amendments because the folks on the other end and some other folks said, no, we're just going to talk about the money. And our folks here in the House were real insistent that this be a topic of recalibration. And so that's a credit to you folks on this floor. And then also I think it was, you know, it was this House and the good chairman and the members here who served on this committee, we were insistent that we get started with phase one in a hurry because we just felt that although we won't have all the answers, we're going to at least get started. But I would like to just point out page 4 where it starts on line 4, and it goes through, it talks about positive and negative process, and then it goes through page 5, 6, 7, and talks about sanctions, talks about department turnaround teams, all those kind of things, to the really the bottom of page 9 on line 22. This looks significantly different than what first came out of the Select Committee, because that was problematic, and they've tried to fix it in the Senate. And I'm not sure this is a done deal yet. I think whether we want to take a whack at this or we just want to punt it down the road to the committee, I'm not sure yet. But what the good representative from Midland, the state, said is exactly right. And most cases now, because this is really a No Child Left Behind in a smaller scale where it's continuous improvement, and even when you're at 99%, you still have to keep improving, and as we know, it's just not going to work that way. And most places now are looking at really cut scores, where you're in the excelling category, let's say, maybe divide you into three categories, excelling and maybe performing or whatever it'd be in the middle, and then some kind of focus or needs improvement. And in my opinion, I think that's the way that it'll be workable. So when if you're in the excelling, hey, let's leave you alone. Keep doing what you're doing. You obviously got great leadership and teachers and the parents are bought in. Kids are doing great. And let's move on to helping those folks in that focus or needs improvement level. But so I would just tell you, 4 through page 9 needs some work. That deal, that's a Senate thing to try to fix some issues that we had. We just didn't get it probably right on the thing. But anyway, I just that was more comment than question. And, again, I appreciate all the work that folks in House Education have put to this as well as we move forward. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Sumlich.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just kind of a quick question with respect to school-level performance. I'm just thinking about the possibility of small schools where you have energy impact areas, where you have a lot of students moving in and out. Was there any thought given to, instead of looking at these maybe on a year-to-year basis, to look at them on a every other year basis so you can get a better average in a cross-section that you're making sure you're measuring the performance of the same students, you know, or similar students over a period of time instead of from year to year?
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, during the interim when we were studying this, these questions came up that were asked by the gentleman from Natrona County and the good gentleman from the chairman of the Ag Committee. These are the reasons we have the task force, and these are the reasons we have the advisory committee. These are some of the issues that are going to be studied, and things will come back, and there'll undoubtedly be legislation. This is the get start thing and the regular thing, but there'll be some changes made to address these very very things. But until you know how you do this, example was the Rock Springs was one of the questions that was there. They have a very transient group of people in and out, in and out, in and out, and that would affect scores. And how do you deal with that? So this is what the advisory committee and the task force are going to be looking at. And I really believe that they've done a masterful job with this piece of legislation and really supported everybody.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, and I do appreciate the good question from the chairman of the Ag Committee. Those are valid questions, and the good thing is that we have measures in place right now to determine which students are at risk, which ones are on free and reduced lunches, which ones are English language learners, which students are transient. We have that data. And so as we move forward and into phase two, really your question applies to phase two, I would say, and I hate to just keep punting it to phase two, but we didn't have the time or the resources, quite frankly, to fully implement this thing, and that's why we're taking this phased approach. I hear your concerns. I'm right there with you. I don't think we need to be punitive to those districts that have students that there's no question they're going to have more struggles. So I fully anticipate that we'll compensate for that.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the time and the effort that has gone into this. Education unto itself is a process of change. As we develop our educational capacities, we automatically bring about an inherent need to understand some change. A couple of general observations with not as a criticism of your work, but rather some broader views relative to it. One is a quotation of the president of Harvard University, and he said, if government tried to do to colleges what they've done to K through 12, it would really be quite disastrous. We don't have adequate tools for it. It wouldn't work the way they think it will work, and it would tend to have a dampening effect on the search for better measures, and that search for better measures is a part of your effort. As you say, is really a part of the process. Two things that do come to mind, however, that is very, very difficult for us to get a grasp on in Cheyenne, and that is that when we talk about an accountability system of 48 school districts, as complex as education it is, it really takes a systemic approach, meaning that the communities in which those schools reside have to have and share the same excellence that we're trying to demand here. And secondly, is that the parents, as involved with the students, have to equally share their responsibility in promoting and making sure, as an example, one school district had 88 school days of absence under the tardiness system that is prevalent today. How do you get those parents to make sure that the students attend school? How do we get that kind of support? And that kind of recognition is difficult to come by from speeches here in Cheyenne. And then lastly is the organization of the schools themselves. It is omitted in my studies of your effort as to what can be done K through 6, middle school, and high school. If we treat them all the same and have the same kind of process, we're destined to fail. If we take a look at them and look at them in segregated parts and different accountabilities and different kinds of expectations as well as different testing, we have a prospect of success. And I'm on the side of a desire for that success.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this point in time, I'd like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 70. In the legislation, as I stated before, we are going to be creating a new statewide summative assessment. And this amendment just simply puts that before an RFP is signed, that the Education Committee or the select committee would have the opportunity to be briefed by the state superintendent before we get ourselves into the next pause. I think it's a decent level of accountability. It's not onerous. It doesn't require the permission of the select committee. Just briefs them and lets them know what's going on. I would call for the question.
All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill. Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Committee of the Whole Amendment. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 70. This amendment is basically the merit pay bill that we saw come through the House, and that bill has been parked at the bottom of general file on the other side, and we would like to study it. We would like to look at it, and I would urge your adoption. You've already voted for this, so I would call for the question.
All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 3 to Senate File 70. This changes the composition of the Select Committee from 4 members to 5. I think it's more reflective of the way we do business. You still have a 5-member on each side committee, so ties would still fail. And I would rather have 5 than 4. It's kind of a preference. Up to the body. As chairman, I would rather have 5 than 4. So I would call for the question.
All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number 3, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill. Chairman Teeter, or Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 4 to Senate File 70. This comes out of a conversation a good chairman of education I had. Several members, I know members from District 53, 34, 33, 32, 21, and 1 are all former Board of Trustee members or state board members. And, and I guess in our conversation we had the other evening in talking about all this, about accountability and local control. And I know when I ran for election in 2002, my first year, it was all about local control. And it was a hot topic. And I think probably all of you ran on that same issue, said local control, government close to the people's best. And I all of us have a certain contradiction, but I know personally I've pushed hard for full-day kindergarten, for tutors, which this House has rejected year after year, to make that categorical. This House did do a categorical class size amendment. Those kind of things that push back against local control a little bit, but I guess for me personally, as I've been in this process now in my 5th term here, I push probably as far as I want to push. I mean, I'm starting to get to the edge a little bit where I'm feeling like, okay, we've probably pushed the local school boards enough. And so we talked about local school boards, and our schools are so different. I mean, my school district with federal funds, it's $250 million that 9 people are entrusted to manage. And so here's was the genesis of this, is to have this committee also look at, similar to what we do in our hospital boards, other boards where we have mandatory trainings, and also talk about some compensation for our school boards. And I don't know what that'll look like, but I think we ought to at least look at it and have a plan. If we're really going to hang our hat on local control, well, those local board members are going to be key to know about employment law. Look at all the work we've done on employment law in this House. And then should know about the school finance model. What does it even look like for their district? And all of you have different stories from some very tiny school districts to very large ones. But our school boards have a constitutional duty. And it ought to be part of some training in my mind. And so I want to throw that out there for you to think about it. And we pay our county commissioners, city councilmen, all kinds of folks. And if we're going to have local control, I'd like to look at this issue. So I'd stand for any questions.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rising on in support of the amendment, it's really too bad that we expect our school boards to manage $1.3 billion and we don't pay them anything. I mean, even if you paid them just a little bit, I think it would show that we value them and that what they do is important, and not that they don't think that it is, but I think it's time. We have made education in this country so dadgum complicated, and, we're guilty of it, too. We're making it even more complicated. And as it gets more complicated, there's more responsibility, and I think it's appropriate to pay them. So my idea was to just put an amendment on here that says we're going to pay them $1,000 a month. But this takes a more measured approach. We're just going to study it. We like to study things anyway until our heads explode. So that's fine. We can study it, and I'd urge your aye vote.
Are you ready for the question on the amendment? All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number 4, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill. Is there any other discussion on the bill? Chairman Teeters?
Just real briefly, I appreciate the body's patience on this complicated issue. Don't think this is a sacred cow that you can't mess with. You know, you guys brought me 23 amendments on the last one, so I fully anticipate this one will be worked just as well. I would hope that it is. We need to talk about this some more as it works its way through the process, and so I look forward to our conversation, and I would call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Teeter's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 70 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate File 70 is passed. The Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 37. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 37, introduced by Senator Emmerich, an act relating to health insurance definitions. This bill was sent to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended to do pass. Ayes, Barbudo, Kraft, Gay, Gingrich, Green, Harvey, Hunt, Miller, Peasley, signed Representative Harvey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Harvey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that Senate File 37 do pass, and I will turn the explanation over to the good co-sponsor of the bill for explanation.
Chairman Illoway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill, health insurance definitions, is intended to remove confusion. And I'll tell you, I've been down here for a number of years, and I've certainly been confused with some of the terms. Major medical and comprehensive insurance is commonly termed true health insurance. The definition of disability insurance, as used within Wyoming statute, is so broad that it includes not only true health insurance, but also other types of products, such as disability income insurance, long-term care insurance, specified disease insurance, and other products considered supplemental or secondary. In past years, as mandates of true health insurance have been introduced and enacted, exclusions have had to be made on a case-by-case basis to exclude these other insurance products. This has been necessary to avoid duplicate or unwanted coverage and the added cost to consumers associated with such unintended consequences. Wyoming has already narrowed the definition of private health benefit plan to exclude these products, and this Senate file makes the definition of disability insurance and private health benefit plan consistent for all legislation enacted in the future. The true purpose of the Senate file is to provide transparency so to ensure mandates are not unintentionally adopted into Wyoming statute. The body down the hall worked very closely with the Department of Insurance and the Department of Health, and they amended the bill on page 2, lines 14 through 17, and with the insurance commissioner, they amended on page 5, lines 1 through 9, which is section 3, which says the Wyoming Insurance Department shall review the Wyoming Insurance Code regarding the statutory use of the definitions of health insurance, disability insurance, and other related insurance product terms. We had a bill in Corporations Committee this year, which probably was a pretty good bill, but it talked about it confused disability insurance and health insurance, and it failed. So this bill is kind of a breath of spring because of the way terms have been used. You'll notice on the bottom of page 2, disability insurance is defined. The term disability insurance does not include any of the following accepted benefits, and it goes through a long list of what it does not include. And then you go over onto page 4, and then you talk about the section 2. The provisions of this act shall only apply prospectively to any individual or group disability insurance policy issued, delivered, issued for delivery, or renewed in this state on or after July 1, 2011. Statutory provisions concerning the accepted benefits enumerated in Wyoming statutes as amended in Section 1 of this act
which were enacted prior to July 2, 2011, shall remain applicable. And then Section 3 goes into what I talked about, they worked with the insurance department. And the insurance department will report the results of the review to the Joint Corporations Elections and Political Subdivisions Interim Committee and the Joint Labor, Health, and Social Services Interim Committee not later than April 1, 2012. If there's no questions, I call for the question. But I'm sure the good professor from the center of the state will have at least one question.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, Mr. Chairman, I do have a question here. On, you get down to page 2, line 19, or 21, actually. It says disability insurance defined, and then you proceed to define it by saying what it isn't. And that's, I find that odd. Is there a way you can define, after you say what it isn't, then you can tell us what it is? I don't see that anywhere. It gives 13 different things that it isn't, but it doesn't tell you what it is.
Chairman Elway?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And he's absolutely correct, but if you'll notice that that's little b, and I did not take the time, and I should have, to take a look at 26.5103, which would have a, what disability insurance as defined is.
Chairman Brown.
Mr. Chairman, 26.5103, disability insurance defined, A. Disability insurance is insurance of any kind on human beings against, 1, bodily injury, disablement, or death by accident or accidental means, or the expense thereof, or 2, disablement or expense resulting from sickness.
And then, Mr. Chairman, and I thank my good friend from across the hill, and then it goes through on B. It says, for any statute with an effective date on or after July 2, 2011, unless expressly and specifically provided by statute, the term disability insurance does not include. And then it goes through the list.
Is there any further discussion on the bill? Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Harvey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 37 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. Senate File 37 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 50. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 50, introduced by the Labor Committee, an act relating to the administration of government regarding Medicaid options study. This bill was sent to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Barbudo, Kraft, Gay, Gingrey, Green, Harvey, Hunt, Miller, Peasley. Signed, Representative Harvey, Chairman. The bill was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace. No, Esquivel. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 50, or Senate filed number 50, do pass. And I'll turn over the explanation of the bill to Chairman Harvey.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill is about an option to Medicaid. And if you look, this is a study bill. And we're going to look at, if you start on page 2, line 13, the study shall examine the Medicaid state plan that provides the health care paid for by the state and the federal government and determine the total annual costs of the benefits per enrolled person. So we want to know how much does it cost to cover each person. And then on 2, little I, the study shall examine broad categories, excuse me, including physical, mental, and dental health, and the cost of each of those benefits. 3, little I, it shall collect information from insurance companies to determine a premium cost of private insurance that has a similar plan. For Little I, she'll summarize the basic insurance policy benefits package. Five is compare the cost of the health care portion of each of the Medicaid program and associated costs if the Medicaid clients were covered by private insurance. What if we could privatize this? Wouldn't that be great? So what are the costs? And then little six, determine the cost of state supporting Medicaid-like insurance premiums for individuals who would otherwise be eligible for Medicaid. So instead of paying for all of their medical costs, how about if we pay their premiums? And then look, the next one is talking about the cost of the premiums and a reasonable copay. So could we help people pay their premiums and then they would just be insured? And then little eight shall report the total appropriations necessary to support each program by fiscal year through 2019-2020 biennium. And then if you go on to the bottom, it's going to talk about innovative service delivery models like the accountable care organizations. And I don't know if you guys know what that is, but that's where we contract with, and there is one hospital in our state that is an accountable care, and they take on a number of what we call high-cost patients. And they say, okay, for $15,000, we will take care of all of this person's medical costs for the year. Sometimes they win, sometimes they lose, but on the average, they do all right. And what they do is they try and keep people healthy. It's talking about including medical health homes and primary care medical homes and total health records. What if we offer, on to page five in the top, more limited benefits for a specific population than the Medicaid statutes require? Implementation of cost sharing at levels that exceed Medicaid statutory limitations. Establishment of insurance models. Establishment of managed Medicaid models. And establishment of innovative programs. And I want to let you know that the federal government does allow us to apply for, they're called 1115 waivers. If we come up with an innovative model that we can do this cheaper, better, or at least as effective, they're called 1115 waivers. Some states receive block grants for Medicaid or voucher systems. And so we want to study these. We want to talk about what are the alternatives to Medicaid? And this bill lists some of those, but it doesn't limit it all. And right now, this bill to assist the people, the governor, and the legislature in deciding whether to accept the new mandatory eligibility and other requirements of Medicaid, to withdraw from that program and establish an independent state-supported safety net program for health care, and then to assist the executive branch and legislative budget staff in making accurate budget estimates for the cost of Medicaid reconfiguration if it's accepted. And it's to help form the basis for an application for a Medicaid waiver. It shall be completed by May 1st of 2012, unless the governor requires an earlier completion date, and submitted to the Labor Committee and Appropriations Committees. The oversight entity will result in legislation that would come before the 2013 general session, and the study shall be available to the people and the legislature and on the website. There is an appropriation of $100,000 from the general fund to the governor's office, and that is where the study is seated today. And with that explanation, I'd stand for any questions.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 50 and ask for your favorable consideration. On both this bill and the next, which are study bills, remember our elder statesman in Washington, D.C. sent us the good word that when it comes to these health issues and Medicare issues, that we should study everything and commit to nothing. I think that's excellent advice. But one of the things that I noticed when this bill was being presented to the Appropriations Committee is that there really wasn't any legislative presence. And one of the things that we have said over and over again is that when these are the, this is the biggest part of our state budget. It's the most important thing, in my opinion, that we are going to be dealing with over the interim. It's really, really important that we have not only legislators on these committees overseeing the work that's being done, but we really need to be driving the boat and owning it, so that we can come back here with confidence when we gather again for the budget and know, have people in this body who are knowledgeable and who understand as well as anybody can the complexities and the consequences of each of these options. And so what this amendment does is it there's actually a lot more words here than you would really think you would have to have, but what it does is it changes it from a governor executive branch ran study to a oversight task force, and that the task force shall have 7 members, 4 of whom are members of the legislature, and up to three who are appointed by the governor. And the 2 legislative members appointed by the president of the Senate, one of them shall be the chairman of the Labor, Health, and Social Services Standing Committee. And in the House, the speaker will appoint 2 members, one of whom will be the chairman of the Labor, Health, and Social Services Standing Committee. And then it includes an appropriations to pay for the salary and per diem mileage as is customary for these kinds of efforts. And with that, I would answer questions or call for the question.
Are you ready for the question on the amendment? All those in favor of committee of the whole amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill. Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Vice Chairman Miller's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it does so with the recommendation that Senate File 50 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senate File 50 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 102. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 102, introduced by the Labor Committee, an act relating to administration of government Medicaid cost study. This bill was sent to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes: Barbudo, Kraft, Gay, Gingrey, Green, Harvey, Hunt, Miller. No: Peasley. Signed, Representative Harvey, Chairman. The bill was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass. Ayes: Berger, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace. No: Edmonds, Escobel. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Harvey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 102 do pass. And I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. And I would turn the explanation of the bill over to the good representative from House District 45 for an explanation of both the bill and the Standing Committee.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll go through the bill first, and then we'll go over the amendment. This is part 2 of the 2 bills following up on the last one. This bill, I'd like to quote the distinguished colleague from House District 52, who quoted our senior statesman, has said we should study everything and commit to nothing. This bill is to study the ACA, what additional costs that we will incur if we implement the ACA, what savings, of which I'm sure there will be many savings as we implement the ACA, and also what will happen if we do not implement the ACA whatsoever. So that is what the bill is to focus on. I know some of you may be saying to yourself, we had a bill for $20,000 just 2 years ago studying the ACA and what would happen. That was not a Wyoming-centric bill, and as the saying is, you get what you pay for. We did not get much return on our dollar, spending only $20,000 on that study. So the big difference in this bill compared to that study conducted a couple years ago is this will be a Wyoming-centric bill studying what will happen to Wyoming with the ACA being implemented or the ACA not being implemented and its effects on Wyoming. I'd like to start on page 8, if we could. I know we had the discussion the other day whether or not to have legislative intent put into bills. This bill does have the legislative intent, but it's giving the intent to the commission who studies the ACA what our intent is as a legislative body. And essentially it says whether to accept or withdraw from the ACA altogether based upon financial consequences that the state of Wyoming will face. It asks for accurate budget estimates. Going on to page 9, it says whether or not we should request Medicaid waivers. It also states so the members of the public and also legislators will know the cost estimates of how it's going to affect us individually as a whole body. And then it says what's going to be submitted to the drafts. It's going to go both the Joint Labor Health and also Joint Appropriations Committees. And it'll be due by September 2012. Now, as we go to page 2, it gets into the specifics of what the study will be addressing. There'll be a follow-on amendment for the first lines 1 through 6, depending on who's going to be on the board, and we'll address that when we get to the amendment, which will be similar to the last bill. As you go to the bottom of the page, it says about the cost estimates going towards the federal government and also the state sharing be broken down specifically by tables, addendums, appendixes, footnotes, within state fiscal years, by calendar years, by federal fiscal years. So we'll be comparing apples to apples and oranges to oranges. The study will start with the implementation in 2014, going all the way to 2020. It will assume all eligible people as of now, but then it will break it into further on who we're going to, the additional people requiring service, because we're assuming that people will intentionally drop their income to have eligibility into the new Medicaid program. So we're going for assuming the estimates from 138% of the poverty line to 150% of the poverty line. We'll have a 50% increase of people to get the increased benefits, and then people who, from 150% to 200% of the poverty line, 25% of them is our assumption who will intentionally drop their income down to receive the Medicaid benefits that they're not currently receiving. So those are some of the assumptions that are built in to the study. Pending any questions, we'll go on to the First Amendment. Okay. The First Amendment is the appropriations. The original bill requested a $600,000 study, and then it was cut down to $60,000. And I believe, as our distinguished colleague who has gone into China, that would be a representative of his type of haircut, going from $600,000 to $60,000. So what we try to do is put some road grain back into this budget and increase it back up to $100,000. So pending any questions on the amendment, I would call for a question of the amendment.
You have heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The standing committee amendment has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Same song, second verse, except that with this study, which is the cost study, I felt and we felt that it was more important to include the appropriations. And so it's exactly the same, 7 members, 4 from the legislature, 3 from the governor. One of the members appointed shall be the chairman of appropriations in the House and chairman of appropriations in the Senate, and with the accompanying appropriation to take care of expenses. I'll answer questions or call for the question.
All those in favor of the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill. Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Harvey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 102 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate File 102 is passed the Committee of the Whole. Before we move on to the next bill, I'd like to observe that I noticed a few senators have poked their head in the back. I'd like to welcome them and suggest that it's nice to see they're working as hard to get our bills out of their side as we are to get theirs out. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 25. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 25, introduced by Senator Martin, an act relating to Wyoming Long-Term Care Choices Act. This bill was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Barbudo, Kraft, Gingrich, Green, Hunt, Miller, Peasley, No, Gay, Harvey. Signed, Representative Harvey, Chairman. The bill was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Escobel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace, No, Edmonds. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Harvey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 25 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And I will turn the explanation of both of those over to the fine representative from House District 17.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure to bring you Senate File 25, which is the Wyoming Long-Term Care Choices Act. And what this particular piece of legislation does is it provides for the creation of a statewide network for aging and disability resources. Now, many of our Wyoming citizens, and most especially the 75,000 of them that are suffering from some form of disability or our aging population, don't really know about all the available programs and the services, which then restricts their ability to make choices about any of their long-term care services. Now, long-term care services are going to cross several separate state agencies. So there's a lot of services out there across a number of state agencies. And when you're in a position where you have to make a difficult decision and you aren't very well informed, the choices that you make are not always the best, and they're not always the most cost-effective, and they often don't provide for the least restrictive environment. And they're often costly to the state, especially if the choice is a nursing home or another state-run facility. Now, the proposed Aging and Disability Resource Center is designed to provide linkages to services and to resources for those living with disabilities and for the aging population. And it uses what's called a care transitions model. And research on this particular model shows that if you bridge an emergency room visit with home care services or supports, it results in a net cost savings of approximately $10,000 a person. So if you take that and you say, wow, what if we just did that for one person in each county? That's $230,000 a year just saved right there, just by assuring support and services to avoid a hospital readmission. It's also, we have a piece of research that talks about without this kind of information, 1 out of 5 Medicare patients are very frequently readmitted within 30 days of their original admission. So we're talking about a couple of things. We're talking about reduced hospital readmissions, and we're talking about delayed or avoided nursing home placement, but we're also talking about cost savings and increased quality of life for these individuals. Now, the services involved are just a broad, broad spectrum. There's such things as options and benefits counseling, streamlined access to care, person-centered discharge planning, long-term care planning, referrals, quality assurances, and the list just goes on and on and on. Now, it's important to point out a couple of things in this piece of legislation. One is, this isn't really a new program. There was a pilot program, and it operated on a grant from the Administration on Aging. It ran from 2005 to 2009 out of the good city in the center of the state, and it served 1,250 people in just that time period. Now, right now, we're operating on a new 3-year grant. And this grant from the same agency is designed to explore the creation of an ADRC system in Wyoming. It's set to expire in 2012. Now, this contract's already been awarded. It was awarded to a group in the southwest corner of the state who's going to provide toll-free online and direct long-term care options statewide. There's another really important thing to remember, and I'm not real sure that it's terribly clear in the bill, so I really want to point this out to you, that when we talk about a resource center, we're not talking about a building. We're not talking about going out and building a whole bunch of buildings. We're not talking about creating new facilities. We're not talking about adding on to existing resources. So when we talk about a physical facility, we're talking about like a room that's maybe in the senior center or maybe a desk and a chair where somebody can sit down and talk to people or can go online or can use something like Skype to talk to the folks that are coordinating this program. So that's real important to remember, that we're not talking building, we're not talking new facilities. So what we're doing with this bill is we're authorizing the Department of Health to use competitive grants and to use contracts for funding. And we're also authorizing them to determine locations. And again, it's not locations for new buildings. It's not location for new facilities. So remember that. We're not talking about adding on to this kind of thing. And if you see in your desk, there was a handout distributed that speaks to this, that talks about the facts, talks about the myths versus the facts, also gives you a projected cost savings. And I won't read that to you because you can certainly read it, but it's just information based on 2010 statistics that we've seen just with the counties that are currently served by the agency in the southwest part of the state that's going to administer it, that just with at this point seeing maybe 6 calls that resulted in an appropriate lower level of care, you can see the cost saving. So you can see that. Another thing that's really important to remember is this is totally voluntary kind of thing. So if a community chooses not to access these services, chooses not to participate, they certainly don't have to. But what we really are looking at is expertise statewide on long-term care options. We're looking at a group that's going to do this online with phone calls, with computer access, that will answer questions about aging and disabilities. We're hoping to help Wyoming residents just navigate that big, broad spectrum of long-term care options. Now, these ADRCs that have been in other places have a real proven track record of saving the state's money through the limitation of nursing home admissions and assisting in the transition from nursing homes to home-based care and in making our citizens aware of our options. So for that reason, I would ask for your support of the bill. Thank you. I would also move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to this bill, which just simply defines what the authority is. It defines what an eligible person is, a person 55 years of age or older, or a person 18 years of age or older with a physical or an intellectual disability. It authorizes the department to commence in rulemaking, authorizes the effective date. I would move the Standing Committee amendment to Senate File Number 25, and at this time I would ask for your favorable consideration of the Standing Committee amendment.
We are on the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. Is there any discussion? Okay. You have heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The Standing Committee Amendment has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a great program to get the small amount of money, the great returns, and the good representative has just done a great job of explaining. I don't need to be redundant, but in my counties of Sweetwater and Uinta, they've used these services with great results, helping the elderly folks. Just had the senior citizens folks call up, and both are just way impressed with the program and very supportive of it. We have better care, both major and minor problems in these folks, and they have somebody to come and talk to. Listen to them. A lot of times they don't know where to go, and these folks are there to help them. They use, as was pointed out, existing buildings. Doesn't matter whether hospital, county commission, or the county buildings, or the senior citizens. And very impressed with the director that we have trying to really help these folks. And I think all around the state, this program would be just a great benefit. There isn't a big money value attached to it. So I think it'd be very beneficial for us to support this.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 25 and ask for your favorable consideration. And there was actually two copies dropped in your drawers, so you may look at the corrected copy. And this aims at the language on page 2, lines 6 through 8. And the good representative of Sweetwater County touched on this, that in reading through the bill, I got an impression, or at least a concern, that the language there suggested that there might need to be physical facilities. And just to clear up what the requirements are, what we want local communities to do, I just simply changed this so that it says we have to require a degree of local community funding for a center. That eliminates the discussion of a physical facility. I understand a lot of these programs do operate with a phone and a computer, and they don't need much more than that. And so we don't want to suggest within the language of the bill that they do need more than that. I do, in general, support the concept of the bill. I think it ultimately will save the state money and get people the resources they need, but I'd appreciate your favorable consideration of that cleanup amendment.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I consider this an extremely friendly amendment. The good representative has touched on the exact concern I had with the bill, that it's not real clear that you don't have to have a building. So I would urge your favorable consideration, and I would call the question on this amendment.
All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill. Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Harvey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 25 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senate File 25 has passed the Committee of the Whole. I wanted to let everyone know that I was informed by the majority floor leader that we are going to be here until we finish Senate File 29, no matter how late that is, so I just wanted to make everyone aware of that fact. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 93. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 93, introduced by Senator Martin, an act relating to professions and occupations, dietetics, licensure. This bill was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Barbudo, Kraft, Gay, Gingrich, Green, Harvey, Hunt, Peasley, No, Miller. It was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Harvey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 93 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and will turn the explanation of both of those over to the good representative from House District 25.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Madam Chairman. With the, at the urging of the majority floor leader, I'll try to be brief but complete with this. First, as the standing committee amendment has been moved, I want to quickly go over it. It is an aggregate standing committee amendment. If you have it in front of you, it starts with page 1, line 8. The word penalties is stricken from the enabling the act description and inserting for injunctive relief. That's on page 8. On page 8, just a one word is stricken, the word currently, and that would make it so there's no question about the time sequence and the time reference that's involved. On page 9, and we're in a section where we're describing exemptions, and the exemption number 7 is for a person providing weight control services. That's the introduction of a long paragraph. The Standing Committee Amendment would put a period right there, wanting it to be clean and clear and direct and not getting into a program review as a part of that exemption. Further, on page 13, line 19, we're in a section under powers of the newly created board. We're talking about the board's responsibility to adopt rules and regulations, and rather than make it broad again, the committee just wants to specify certain rules and regulations, and the net effect of the amendment would be rules and regulations related to applications, fees, discipline, suspension, and revocation. On to page 24. Recalling that on page 1, we struck the word penalties. In the Standing Committee Amendment, we on page 24, line 5, the word penalties is stricken, where we it's a new chapter, a new board, just getting started. The committee didn't want to push for penalties. They've left the authority of injunctive relief for the board to police this act. So that I believe that covers the Standing Committee Amendment. And, Mr. Chairman, it's been moved. I would call for the question.
You have heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The Standing Committee Amendment has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen of the 61st, I bring you a licensure bill, dietetics licensure, and this is from the Registered Dietitians of the Wyoming Dietetic Association. They are unified in seeking to obtain a licensure requirement for their dietetic profession, as Wyoming is one of only 4 states in the Union that does not have either a certification or a license requirement for dietitians. So who is a registered dietitian? I think you'll want to know. A registered dietitian is a food and nutrition expert who has met rigorous academic and professional requirements such as a baccalaureate degree, bachelor's degree, with coursework approved by the American Dietetic Association's Commission on Accreditation for dietetics education, completed an accredited and supervised practice program of some 900 hours, passed a national examination administered by the Commission on Dietetic Registration, and completes continuing professional education. Where do they work? The majority of Wyoming's 117 registered dietitians work in the treatment and prevention of disease, administering medical nutrition therapy as part of medical teams in hospitals and private practice, community and public settings, academia, corporate wellness programs, and the food and nutrition industry. In many present situations, they are the only members of an interdisciplinary team, medical team, who are not licensed. The RD credential for a registered dietitian is a legally protected title that can be only used by practitioners who are authorized by the Commission on Dietetic Registration. This is the difference between a nutritionist and a dietitian. Some registered dietitians may call themselves nutritionists, but not all nutritionists are registered dietitians. Dietitians believe the licensing of RDs will protect the public by establishing minimum educational and experience criteria for those individuals who hold themselves out to be experts in food and nutrition. And they believe the state has an obligation to protect the health and safety of the public, and licensing of registered dietitians is consistent with that obligation. Mr. Chairman, I want to highlight just a couple of points. First, on scope of practice. Importantly, the proposed licensure bill does not intend to affect anyone who simply describes the nutritional value of products, nor would it affect other healthcare professionals. The day after this licensure bill is passed, all licensed health professionals and health providers can do what they were doing the day before under their license. This bill is not trying to fence out anyone or create any new markets for business. Second, on fiscal concerns, it's important to know the proposed bill will not create any new state employee. The bill has an initial one-time appropriation of $20,000 to get the board operational and write the needed regulations in the first year of operation. In subsequent years, consistent with Wyoming's policy on self-funded licensing, the board will be a self-sustaining board based on the collection of licensing fees. The fees will be set by rulemaking of the board, but it is anticipated they'll be between $200 and $210 per biennium. And the Dietetic Association of Wyoming has its members' support for this level of fee and for a licensure requirement to be placed on them in general. Last, in regard to operations of the board, this is critical, there is no intention to require any Wyoming facilities to alter anything they do today or hire someone they don't want to hire. This bill does not require any school, any prison, or other entities to hire dietitians in any way, shape, or form. Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I'd like to just briefly touch on a couple of things in the bill. Not a full walkthrough, but I wanted you, of course, page 2, line 1, introduces a whole new chapter. It's called the Dietetics Licensure Act. And then on that same page 2, I want to read a key definition, the definition of dietetics. Dietetics means the integration and application of principles derived from the sciences of food, nutrition, management, communication, and biological, physiological, behavioral, and social sciences to achieve and maintain optimal human health. Dietetics includes the nutrition care process and medical nutrition therapy. Dietetics does not include medical differential diagnosis of the health status of an individual. I think because the committee spent some time on it and because it has been a subject of some discussion on between pages 7 and pages 10 are listed exemptions. And I'd like to just list again for you all the persons who would not need to be licensed under this act. All licensed healthcare professionals, students who are enrolled in an accredited dietitian's program or are participating in a supervised practice experience, federal workers and Wyoming Department of Health workers, Any school district employee who plans meals, retailers who advertise or sell diet aids, college instructors teaching nutrition classes, a person providing weight control services like, I don't want to list the ones, but the popular ones that are advertised widely. A non-resident dietitian who works in Wyoming 20 days or less in a year. And then, just to be clear, that the licensure bill was not meant to fence anyone out. The amendment was added in the other body. Number 9, a person offering general non-medical nutrition information, either as a part of the sale of products or independently, who does not represent that they are a licensed dietitian. This could be health food stores or sellers of food supplements. Mr. Chairman, I think that's a description of the bill, and with that, I would stand for questions. And if none call for the question, here we are.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of my granddaughters has a national license as a dietitian, and I've decided not to ask any of the House attorneys if that constitutes a conflict of interest, as I vote aye for this bill and support it. However, in the event in third reading and final passage, one of them tells me that it is, I'll ask forgiveness.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, some of you that have been around here a while know how I feel about licensing. And, you know, basically, I guess what I need to hear from the sponsors of this is verification that licensing is supported by the consumer side. Licensing is supposed to be initiated by consumers. And I think I heard testimony given that this was brought to the committee by registered dietitians or somebody like that, that are asking to be licensed, which throws a flag up to me. You know, we license brain surgeons, but we don't do it because the brain surgeons come in and request it. We do it because the consumer feels a lot better about that type of procedure being taken care of on him with somebody that's licensed rather than somebody isn't. And, you know, this goes back in history. Barbers, they're one of the first people that got licensed, and they were actually licensed by consumers, or the people that were using the services of a barber. And at that time, barbers were actually kind of doctors themselves, because medical science wasn't very far advanced at that time. They figured the way to get well is to bleed. So when you go in and get your hair cut, the barber would cut a hole in your arm and let you bleed while you're getting your hair cut, and at the same time you're getting your hair cut, you get well. And, of course, now barbers don't do that anymore, but this shows another thing. Once there's no need for barbers to be licensed anymore, it always gets twisted around, so we're benefiting the vendors or the suppliers. And that's really what I see happening here, and was presented by the evidence. It always evolves into, the justification is that, I got a flyer somebody gave me that says licensing registered dietitian protects the public, but there's no evidence anybody on the committee gave me that the public came in asking for this. And this is a perfect example of how we need to ask ourselves how the people of Wyoming are going to benefit tomorrow morning, or won't be tomorrow, next week when we get this bill passed. How are they going to be better or worse off? We're going to have a new committee that's going to cost $20,000, which the way we spend money around here is nothing. But And then we've got to have another board, and we've got to have another the governor appointing people to fill this board. And in all it's really done is created a niche for dietitians. And whether or not that's going to work or not is suspect, because you got a list of exemptions that says, you know, almost everybody's exempt anyway. When you vote on this, you know, look at need. You know, if we really need this and the consumers are telling you we need it, then vote for it. But if it's just a deal to kind of provide protectionism to the dietitians themselves, that's the wrong reason. Thank you.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the question. The concern is, why do we need this as a matter of policy? And it is, the short answer would be that for the public that is seeking nutritional advice and nutritional direction, this would be, this is a protection for them. Title 33, full of healthcare professional licensing, the doctors, doctors and nurses and physical therapists and on and on. Licensing sets a standard. This is the way I look at it. You set a recognized standard for education, for experience, for examination, and then you hold that up to the public. You hold that up and say, this licensee, this applicant for license, has met that bar. It is reassuring. It is it tells the public that if you, particularly those persons who might need help in counseling with disease control, and that's what license or the dietitians do when they work as a part of a medical team. Somebody has a medical condition. They could be adversely impacted and affected by improper nutrition counseling. This license will say these people are expert at what they're doing in terms of rendering nutrition advice. With that, I think that is the reason, and that is the basis for a group that is experienced and educated and examined. They are validated, and now they ask for a licensing from this body.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Harvey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 93 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Was someone calling division? Okay. Senate File 93 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 29. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 29, introduced by the Developmental Intellectual Programs, an act relating to the Medicaid program involving developmental disability services. This bill was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Barbudo, Kraft, Gay, Gingrich, Green, Harvey, Hunt, Miller, Peasley. Sign, Representative Miller, Vice Chair. It was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Stewart, Wallace, excused, Pedersen. Sign, Representative Berger, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Vice Chairman Miller?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendations that Bill Number 29 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and I'll briefly explain it. This amendment, it's rather lengthy, but it's just some cleanup of where the appropriations are going. Lines 10 through 30 are changing this appropriation to these appropriations. Line 32 to 34 strikes the $76,000 and inserts $50,000. And with that, I'll call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1.
Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Representative or Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I would withdraw Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 2. It does the exact same thing as Standing Committee at Number 1.
Vice Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The fine chairman from House District 26 will explain the bill.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Here it is, folks. I promised when we were doing the budget that this would be the bill that would fix it. The Select Committee on Developmental Disabilities was given three charges. Number one was fix the money. Number two was to develop some services for people with dual diagnosis, which is people with mental illness and people with intellectual disabilities. And number three was fix the LLC problem, which we have already disposed of. So this bill is a result of CMS asking for a cost-based reimbursement system to where instead of just having an individualized budget amount that is then has negotiated rates by the provider, now we have what does it cost to provide each service? What does it cost to provide nursing? What does it cost to provide day habilitation? What does it cost to provide supervision at night? And so the select committee, the original select committee, worked with some consultants, and we figured out the cost-based reimbursement system. What we didn't understand, the select committee, the division, the consultant, and the providers, all four of us take equal responsibility in the fact that not all of the units of service were accounted for. And so this bill corrects that. It, because some providers provided services to very medically fragile, very difficult clients or clients whose family would remove them from the program for family vacations or family time. And so in order to capture the full individualized budget amount before, they would negotiate the rate to a higher rate so that they had the full individualized budget amount to help them in their budgeting process. Well, now we move to the cost-based reimbursement system, but because they weren't billing all of those units, perhaps they had a client who would be in the hospital for 2 weeks. And this, so then they would subtract 2 weeks' worth of services. So when we took the cost of providing services and multiplied it by the historic units, we came up with the original amount that we thought fixed the cost-based reimbursement system. But we had a whole bunch of lost units, and it took us 5 days into the new fiscal year to figure that out. This bill addresses that, and between the amendment, what it is going to take to replace those units, when you add the adult developmental disability waiver and the acquired brain injury waiver, it's $1.8 million. And so that's how we fix the money. The second thing this bill does is it deals with dual diagnosis. And the the CMS only recognizes a primary diagnosis. So if you are diagnosed with a developmental disability and you are on the DD waiver, then you cannot have a secondary diagnosis and receive treatment for it. If you are diagnosed with mental illness, then there is also a mental illness waiver provided by CMS, and you could receive services for mental health off that waiver. But if you've got both, you cannot receive both kinds of services. So what we've got is providers out there who are dealing with people with severe outbursts, people who have meltdowns, people who may be predators, people who are violent. And we have no system to provide the mental health that they need. So what we've done in this bill is we've created, we've asked the University of Wyoming, the Community College Commission, page 2, lines 4 through, lines 4 through 19. We ask them to cooperate with each other, Community College, Department of Health, and University of Wyoming, and get a training system in place so that we could have people who are already working in the industry trained to be behavioral specialists. So perhaps they're doing dayhab for most of their job, but when someone has a meltdown and they need to have de-escalation therapy, they need to be restrained, they need to have a specialized treatment, then this person who normally makes about $13 an hour can change hats, move in, and serve at a higher rate to do the very specialized treatments that will be set up by these three entities. And it's going to be that they will be trained. They'll set the training standards. They'll set the certification standards. And then these providers will be certified. And they have a year to do that. The department has a responsibility to apply to CMS for authorization to reimburse at an enhanced rate to carry this out. And with that, I will stand for questions.
Representative Blickery.
Mr. Chairman, I was wondering where I could get some of that meltdown protection. I call for the question.
But before we proceed, I need to declare a conflict on this bill. Chairman Harvey?
Mr. Chairman, there is also another amendment to this bill, Committee of the Whole Amendment. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 29, and it's pretty simple. On page 6, we remove some wording in the Standing Committee, and we reinserted it on page 4, line 14, and it says, and include timely testing and certification. And so we just took it from an inappropriate place, put it in a more appropriate place. And with that, I'll call for the question on that amendment.
All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill.
Question?
Question having been called, all those in favor of Vice Chairman Miller's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 29 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate File 29 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Floor Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm always astounded at our ability to discuss issues in detail. But with that, Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. Senate File 47, following a roll call vote, Senate File 47 passed. Senate File 107 amended and further amended recommended do pass. Senate File 121 recommended do pass. Senate File 143, recommended do pass. Senate File 70, amended. And further amended. And further amended. And further amended. And further amended. Recommended do pass. Senate File 37, recommended do pass. Senate File 50, amended. Recommended do pass. Senate File 102, amended. And further amended. Recommended do pass. Senate File 25, amended. And further amended. Recommended do pass. Senate File 93, amended. Recommended do pass. Senate File 29, amended. And further amended. Recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Croker, Chairman.
Representative Croker.
I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole report is adopted. Messages from the Senate.
Message number 336, Mr. Speaker. The President appointed Senate conferees to meet with the like committee number one from the House on Amendments to House Bill 74. Senator Hicks, Chairman. Senator Nutting, Senator Escobel. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 337. Mr. Speaker, the President appointed Senate conferees to meet with the like committee number one from the House on Amendments to House Bill 13. The Senate conferees are Senator Coe, Chairman, Senator Barnard, Senator Rothfuss. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 338, Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bills listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 150, notaries. Ayes 28, noes 2. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 339. Mr. Speaker, the House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated, ayes 28, noes 2. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message number 340, Joint Conference Committee Report. Mr. Speaker, Senate File 101, Hathaway Student Scholarship Program. The Senate adopted the Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on the bill listed by the vote indicated, ayes 30, noes 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 341, Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bills as below by the vote indicated. Senate File 10, Protection of Livestock Animals, ayes 27, no, 0, excuse 3. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 342, Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bills as below by the vote indicated. Senate File 119, Real Estate Brokers and Salesmen Revisions, ayes 27, excuse 3. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 343, Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bills as below by the vote indicated. Senate File 55, Subdivision, Perimeter, Partition, Fencing, ayes 27, excuse 3. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Mr. Speaker, message 344, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bills as below by the vote indicated. Senate File 73, Municipal Solid Waste Landfills, ayes 30, noes 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 345, Mr. Speaker, Senate File 146, Teacher Accountability Act. The Senate failed to concur on the House amendments to the bills as below by the vote indicated, ayes 0, noes 30. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. The Senate requests the House appoint a conference committee number one to meet with a like committee from the Senate to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration of both houses. Message 346. Mr. Speaker, the President appointed Senate conferees to meet with a like committee number one on the House amendments to House Bill 88. The Conferees, Senate Conferees are Senator Co-Chairman, Senator Hicks, Senator Martin. Signed, Diane Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 347, Mr. Speaker. The President appointed Senate Conferees to meet with the Light Committee Number 1 from the House Amendments on Senate File 146. The Senate Conferees are Senator Nicholas, Senator Jennings, Senator Escobel. Signed, Diane Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 348. Mr. Speaker, the President appointed Senate Conferees to meet with the Light Committee Number 1 from the House on amendments to House Bill 8. The Senate Conferees are Senator Geis, Chairman, Senator Driscoll, Senator Rothfuss. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 349, Mr. Speaker, the President appointed the Senate Conferees to meet with Light Committee Number 1 from the House on amendments to House Bill 20. The Senate Conferees are Senator Scott, Chairman, Senator Perkins, Senator Nutting. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Mr. Speaker, message 350. The President appointed Senate Conferees to meet with the Light Committee Number 1 on the House Amendments to House Bill 50. The Senate Conferees are Senator Scott, Chairman, Senator Jennings, Senator Nutting. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 39 engrossed, respectfully reports the same back to the House with the following recommendations. Pursuant to House Rule 8-5, that the bill be returned without recommendation as to passage, and that the following amendments be made to the bill. Ayes, Berger, Escobel, Harshman. No, Edmonds, Stewart, Wallace. Excused, Pedersen. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 4, Education, to whom is referred Senate File 38, engrossed, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Burkhart, Connolly, Freeman, Crone, Laux, Teeters. No, Croker, Madden. Excused, Brechtel. Signed, Representative Teeters, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 12, Rules and Procedures, to whom was referred Senate File 95, engrossed, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Brechtel, Buchanan, Kingrey, Elloway, Lubno, Patton, Korberg, Shepperson, Stubson. No, Connolly, Kraft, Goggles, Throne. Signed, Representative Buchanan, Chairman.
All right, the entertainment is here.
Can we go first?
Oh, wait, hold on. Stand by. Chairman Harvey, did you have a privilege?
Mr. Chairman, I have a committee announcement.
We are not at that order of business quite yet.
Wait,
thank
then.
You.
Mr. Speaker, I handed out the words if you check in your box, and I have a technical correction on line 4. It says, and you out to hear the meter. It should say, and you ought to hear the meter.
He always sings, dragging music to the cattle as he sings. Jackie Boone, the saddle on a horse, a pretty good horse, had a syncopated gator. And you ought to hear the meter of the roar of his repeater. Now they run just once when they hear it in the coming, but the western folks all know he's a highfalutin, shooting something gun from Wyoming. Ragtime cowboy, talk about your cowboy. Ragtime Cowboy Joe, he always sings, ragging music to the cattle as he swings, back and forth in a saddle on a horse, got a syncopated gator, and you ought to hear the meter, hear the roar of his repeater, how they run, when they hear him a-coming, cause the western folks all know, he's a hot ragtime cowboy, talk about your cowboy, ragtime cowboy Joe.
Committee announcements, Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, will meet right now in room 302. The whole House is invited to join us in a training from a representative from ALEC to talk about the ACA.
Chairman Brown.
Mr. Speaker, your committee, Judiciary Number 1, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock a.m. in room H8 to have a discussion about interim topics.
Madam Chair Korberg.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet tomorrow upon adjournment in room H17 with our counterparts down the hall to finalize our list of interim topics for the Management Council.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 6, Travel, will meet tomorrow upon noon recess in room H10, where we will join our compatriots from down the hall and finalize our discussion on interim topics.
Madam Chair Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I haven't found any compatriots yet, but I'm going to meet with what I think are compatriots upon adjournment here in room 204, Appropriations, as we continue negotiating the budget.
Representative Croker.
Your Conference Committee on House Bill 74 will meet tomorrow morning at 8:45 in Senate Room Number 1.
Representative Peasley.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, on behalf of the representative from District 57, I was told to have all of you report at 6:30 tomorrow morning for the prayer breakfast, marking 26 years of doing it. We have the former Adjutant General, Ed Banish, will be our speaker and share with us, and ask you all to be there. 6:30, the Egg and I for the interdenominational prayer breakfast. Thank you.
Vice Chair Stepson.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, will be meeting with the like committee from down the hall tomorrow upon adjournment in room H18 to discuss interim topics.
Any other announcements? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Very good, high-quality work today from this body. You can be proud. It's always good to take a moment and look around at the sights, sounds, and smells of history being made in this room, and a lot of it was made today. I will tell you that the aggressive day today is a big step toward avoiding an extra day next week. So that's why we had the long day today. I'd like to have a little more of a full day on Thursday so that we can get out before the bad weather closes the roads on Friday if possible, but it won't be as long as today. But I do want to make sure that we all have the opportunity to debate fully all of the issues that we have. So with that, Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until tomorrow, February 24th, 2011 at 9:30 a.m.
There we go. You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The House will stand adjourned until Thursday, February 24th, 2011, 9:30.